All righty, Joel Radio, welcome to Joel Radio. 2020 is the year of this podcast. The first show of 2020, welcome in everybody. I ended the year reviewing Star Wars. And again, I like that. I think on those one first day Star Wars reviews, those opening night reviews, I think I'm nailing the consensus, which is good. Which is good. I don't want to be too big of an outlier. I guess I like Solo more than some people did. But Rise of the Skywalker, I think I nailed. If you haven't listened to that and you've seen Star Wars, go listen. Ted Moss joining me.
Hey,
hi, Ted.
Hey, Joel. Happy New Year.
You were listening to the Star Wars review, and I don't even know that you went and saw Star Wars.
That's right. I did not see it. Your review was enough for me.
Well, you were almost going. You were. Can I tell this story, or is this not for
you,
the air?
You can, but ultimately,
I only know it to a point, and then
you
can
take it
from there.
Well, I know, but what you need to know up front is the right thing happened.
Okay.
Because after listening to your review, you wouldn't have wanted me on that show.
All right. So Ted was going to come. I had four tickets for the opening night of Star Wars.
Right.
And I'm not going to ruin that movie, and even though so much of it gets out so quickly nowadays. If you want to listen to the full Star Wars review, go listen to the last episode, because it's all on there. I had a panel. I had Josh Boab, and I had, who else did I have on there? Oh, Kevin Kramus, of course.
Right, right.
Famous Kevin Kramus. Voice of the Michigan State Fair, Kevin Kramus.
Yeah.
Came on, and then he'd seen all the Star Wars movies in the theaters. He was great. But you were going to do that show with us.
I was willing to do that
And Ted
show.
Said, I'd like to go. Let me just make sure I'm trying. I have a date lined up. I'm going to try to do the date earlier in the afternoon. This is
right.
like one of these internet dates.
Right.
I don't know what service, but whatever.
We don't date on the internet.
No, but I mean, you met the girl online.
Yes.
This isn't somebody you knew in real life.
It was
life.
A meet and greet. It
meet
was going to be our first encounter.
So you were going to meet this woman, but instead you wanted to go to Star Wars. So you sent her a message, something to the effect of, hey, I've got the Star Wars thing. I was hoping I could move this date earlier in the evening, and then I could make this movie at 7:15.
Which is a good strategy.
Yeah.
If you're going to break a date, you want to move it up,
right.
not back.
Yeah.
That way the person feels good. So strategically, I was doing the
so
right
thing.
So I said,
Ted, let me give you a few hours to clear this before I get somebody else, because I think it was the day before. And I go, Ted, I'm not going to get anybody else until you tell me we're good. And you kept waiting for this woman to get back to you, and what ended up happening?
Yeah, I never heard back from her, Joel. And the funny thing is, it was her idea to meet in the first place.
Yeah.
I was just going along with the program. It was her idea to meet on this day, and I have found that ladies like it if you pick a time and a location, which I did.
Okay.
So, by the book, I'm doing everything I think the way I should do it. And then I sent her a little message and said, hey, is there any way we could possibly move this up to the afternoon?
Right. Well, nothing. Okay, but let me ask you this. Do you think that message made her ghost you? Or do you feel like that was happening either way?
You know, this happens about 25% of the time.
I would agree with that. I did internet dating, and that happened to me.
Yeah, yeah, and then I don't know if guys do it, but it does seem to be a chick thing that... And I say chick with the greatest regard for women, but it seems to be that about one out of every four times, they chicken out. And maybe they look up your profile on Facebook, and once they see you, they go, I don't want to do this.
I'm out.
Yeah. I know more than I want to know right now. But usually,
maybe they hear you on a podcast, and then they go,
like this. But usually, they'll send you a message and say, oh, you know, something else
can't
came
make
up.
It.
I just found out my sister's having surgery that day or something. But in this case, she just didn't respond.
Yeah.
And so I finally sent you a message, said, look, it would be the wrong thing just not to show up or cancel it on the day of. So I got a pass.
Okay.
And then I went, I think it was the next day, and looked. And her profile was gone completely.
Ooh.
Yeah. She had ghosted me. She had made her profile invisible to me.
Wow.
So I could no longer see the old messages or send new ones.
Oh.
So I was without a date.
Wow.
Yeah, I know.
Or she met somebody and just said, I'm done with this dating shit.
Yeah, that's highly likely.
Yeah, right. I mean, that's possible.
No,
I mean,
it's, it doesn't happen that way. Wow. I mean, sometimes they might say it does. I've done that.
What did you do to her?
Nothing yet. I had plans. No, I just wanted to meet her. She seemed nice. And she was the one that suggested we meet.
She stood you up, essentially. That's the way I see this. She ghosted you. I mean, the terminology, you know.
Yeah.
Maybe the one term is more applicable than another, but I think she was the bad one. She was the bad guy.
Yeah, but you know what? I judge my dating life by the quality of the women that ghost me. And she was pretty high quality.
So you are now getting ghosted by the hottest.
Yes, I am.
The hottest over 50 singles.
Yeah, so. Over 50.
Over 50.
I don't date
under 50. Don't fuck under 50.
No, I don't date under 50. Mm. I don't. Did I ever tell you I signed up on a website called Beautiful People?
What happens? Oh, okay. Yeah, I think you did. But tell the audience.
Yeah. Well, in online dating, there are sites all the way from Plenty of Fish.
Yeah.
And I don't want to say that it's the bottom of the barrel, but it's free. And
Plenty of Fish. A lot of whales.
Yeah. All the way up to the high end sites. Oh. But beyond that, I got frustrated, and I thought there's got to be a place to meet just good-looking people. How do I sort for better-looking people?
Right.
Because I thought that would be interesting. Yeah. And I found a website called beautifulpeople.com.
Okay.
And it's a real dating website.
Real dating website.
And in order to qualify to be a member and participate in Beautiful People, you have to submit a picture and be voted on by the people on Beautiful People.
Okay.
And I thought...
And you did that.
I did. Well, I thought if nothing else... This is going to be good for stand-up comedy. I'm going to get a bit out of this somehow. You know, how I was rejected on Beautiful People.
Were you beautiful enough?
Well, you know what? I submitted a picture.
Yeah.
And you have to wait 48 hours, but they have a meter. Oh. So you come back and kind of check where that dial is.
But people vote on you.
Yes. Oh. Thumbs up or thumbs down and tells you where the votes are coming.
Isn't that hot or not? That was a site a million years ago.
Right. Thing, well, that was, I think that's how Facebook started, was hot or not, right? Or before that, no, it was...
I think Facebook was before hot. Yeah, hot or not was before
but didn't,
Facebook.
Yeah, but didn't they do a comparison on Facebook or somehow?
I don't know. But
Anyhow. But in any case, they voted... And the meter was right in the middle for the longest time, and I thought, I got to change the picture.
Are you being rated in general, or are you being rated for your age?
No, beauty. Just beauty.
But they don't care about anything
else.
It's
a picture, dude. It's just my mugshot. And I'm thinking, I should have submitted a better picture. So I searched for a better picture, found an old picture that was a little blurry, much better. They would not let me change the picture in the middle of the voting.
Oh.
So I waited till the very last minute, and the needle went bing.
You made it.
I was in.
Well,
I was in Beautiful People, and then I searched for people to talk to.
I don't know that that's a scam.
It might have been.
If you were going to do a scam.
I get it, but no.
Let me just put this out there hypothetically.
All right.
You're a guy that's got money that wants to meet women. You go on a site that's only for beautiful people. They say, we're going to put your photo up and vote. And it kind of looks like you're not going to get in. And then at the very end, you make it in.
I think we ought to start that site.
I think that's a scam if it ever was one.
Well, once I got on Beautiful People, I was saying hello to everybody. And nobody's saying hello back.
Yeah.
So I did an age search.
Yeah.
And I was over 60.
Okay.
The oldest other person I could find on Beautiful People was about 45.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So remember back in high school when you went to the school dances and there was the one girl that wore that homemade dress that leaned against the bleachers with acne and nobody talked to her?
Yeah.
That was me on Beautiful People. Honestly, I'm saying hello to everybody. Nobody's saying hello. You know, you do not want to be the ugliest person on a website called Beautiful People. Well, but the women, let me tell you, the women were like, they're models, runway models.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I mean, honest, just
but
every
I don't
one
know.
Of them gorgeous.
See, I think the online dating thing is so phony in a way because they can put whoever they want up there. They never have to have any interaction with you whatsoever. So you send them a message. They don't respond. If they're fake, they're not going to respond.
Right, right.
So
well, you can identify those.
You just don't know. You know, there's so many. The availability of photos. You just go grab a random photo of a person and create a profile.
But eventually you have to meet.
Yeah,
and you're going to find out.
But so many times you don't meet anybody on those.
I met a redhead once who looked like she ate the girl in the picture 3 years prior. She was almost balding when I met her. She was limping down the sidewalk.
I met my girlfriend on Bumble.
Yeah.
Bumble, which is fine.
Great.
I went on
Dates
on Bumble. I went on dates from Tinder. I went on dates from Bumble.
Well, there you go.
And, you know, I met all the weirdos, you know, and I met some really nice people, too.
Yeah.
And I did, you know, my girlfriend, you know, it was a great match.
And she's a great gal,
too. We may have never
too.
Met otherwise. We had a lot in common.
Well, how else do you do it nowadays?
Fun.
You bump into people on the street?
Yeah, you really don't. You almost, it used to be people used to make fun of online dating.
Yeah.
But now online dating is just dating.
Yeah, right.
It's not that thing about, oh, there's online dating and there's real world dating. It's all kind of the same thing. Because even if you meet in real life, all of your chat is going to be on the phone.
Yeah.
Or it's going to be through Facebook or something like that. So I don't know how any different. You know, Facebook has dating now. Have you seen that?
Dude, I've been on all the dating sites, including Facebook. I had 2 Facebook likes this morning on the way in here.
Oh, yeah. Look at that.
Yeah.
Who was the other one?
Yeah.
That wasn't me. I'm kidding.
Yeah, all right.
Yeah.
Boom, boom.
I like Ted. We'll hang out. We'll play guitars. We'll talk. And,
yeah. That's pretty much what I do on my dates now. Anyhow. That's pretty much it.
Maybe you need that. You need a girl who plays piano.
Yeah.
Or
just does vocals. I'll play. That's good. And I mean singing
just
by
vocals. Yes.
I mean singing. But anyhow.
Vocally talented. Vocally.
So anyhow, I didn't get to go with you to the movies. I didn't get to review the show.
You didn't get to go to Star Wars.
And I got ghosted on my date.
Wow.
I sat home alone.
Wow.
Yeah, me and my dogs.
And you're calling me a loser for going to Star Wars.
I did not say that yet.
Yeah, the inference was there.
No, I was saying I am not the person to review Star Wars.
Well, then maybe it's best that you didn't come on
the show. Exactly.
But
I would have sucked.
I thought you would have been funny on the show. I like you.
Hilarious. Yeah.
Yeah, and Josh, you know, Josh is a big Star Wars fan.
And
Kevin Kramus likes Star Wars.
Oh, yeah.
You know, those tickets were hard to get, too.
You got the right people.
And I, you know, I give those guys the tickets for nothing. You know, I mean, it's the least I could do is say, hey.
No, you didn't tell me that.
If you're going to come out.
I would have straight up stood her up for a free ticket.
It's only $10, but, you know, I give, you know, I ask the guys, oh, come in, do the podcast. We're up pretty late. And, you know, it takes a while. So.
No, I think that's great.
Yeah, good. So we saw Star Wars. It was good. I don't know. Read the review. Listen to the review. I don't know. I enjoyed it. I think there was a lot of stuff, and I'm not even going to get into it now, maybe in a couple weeks, because I think there's more spoiler kind of stuff, because I had questions. And that's one of the things when you see these big event movies before anyone else, or at the same time, you know, it comes out, there's no time for me to read the reviews or any reaction to it really at all. And so I'm kind of going off the top of my head, or who was this character, and, you know, actors. And so we'll have to go into that on another show.
Well, you know, you get into
there's questions plot. I had that I didn't.
You're getting into plot review.
Yeah, a little bit.
And I like more movie review when you're talking about how they put it together, how realistic it was, how the acting was, what the scenery. I like that stuff to tell me what kind of movie it was.
Well, here's the deal. I will tell you on today's show.
Okay.
I'm going to give you reviews of 6 movies, all better than Star Wars. Even though I'm a Star Wars fan and I will see every Star Wars, there's a lot of good movies out there. I've been seeing them, and we're going to talk about them later.
Okay.
A lot of movies that I think are going to be considered a lot of the best pictures.
Okay.
Are going to be reviewed later, and some TV stuff, too, so... Stay tuned for that, because I know you asked me what to see, and I told you to see something.
Right.
And you thought that was pretty good, I think. I don't know, we haven't talked about it yet. But let's get into some more stuff about you, Ted.
Okay.
Before we go into movies and TV.
That's always
since
entertaining.
Since you were last on this show.
Yes.
We last on this show. Well, how was your New Year's, by the way? Did you do anything? What's your New Year's party hanging out situation? What do you do?
Well, for New Year's Eve this year, well, 2 years ago I was in Key West.
Okay, so
and that was wild.
You were doing Broken Road comedy.
Yeah, me and Billy in Key West.
Yeah, okay,
you only need to do that once in a lifetime.
Seems like a good place to be, though.
Well,
party town, good weather.
Yeah,
I mean, you might not want to be in a party town.
Yeah, you know what?
Maybe you don't.
And down there, you don't have to do online dating. All you have to do is walk down the street. So, there are benefits for being in Key West.
Okay,
but this year. I took my daughter out to see a matinee to prepare for this show.
Sure, yeah, we'll talk about that.
That was the highlight of my evening.
And then
I went home and turned on the fire and sat there with my puppies and worked on some other things I was doing at the house.
Okay.
So very low profile this New Year's Eve.
When the strike of midnight, January 1st, 2020, you were doing what?
I was on my computer working on my podcast.
Okay. Yeah, well, there you go.
Yeah.
We're going to talk about that. Ted's going to start a podcast.
I am.
He's going to do his own show.
I figured there weren't enough podcasts out there. What I need to do is start my own.
If I could get one-tenth of Joel's listeners to listen
exactly.
to me.
Exactly. Yeah, I need two people is what I need.
We have to start dividing people.
I hope they both show up.
Well, that's good. I was at Comedy Castle. You know, I've been working Comedy Castle, you know, in the showroom for 8 years, you know, as a door guy, and... That's where I was.
Yeah.
I have to stand in the little green room in the backstage area and play Auld Lang Syne at the stroke of midnight.
I think that's great.
How about that?
That's
my
cool.
job.
Was it a packed house for
New Year's
Eve?
We sold out both shows.
Wow. And
so we had a 7:30 show that ended at 9, and then we cleared the room. The people that come to the 10:30 show get all kinds of swag, you know, hats and noisemakers and... A little bottle of champagne.
Now, are they making noise during the show with their
There was a couple of guys that would heckle or, in lieu of laughter or applause, use a noisemaker.
Is that good?
You know, the horn.
Yeah, yeah.
It's not good, but, you know, you got drunk people on New Year's Eve. What are you going to do? You're going to tell them, hey, stop making noise. It's New Year's Eve. You can't do that.
No, I think that's good.
But so that show, the way we book that, and if you're going to run a New Year's Eve show, I think this really works, is you end the show just before midnight. You don't end the show after midnight or even at midnight. You end it a little bit before.
And then have a countdown.
And then we had, you know, so the MC got to do all of those ending show announcements. Hey, make sure to tip the wait staff. If you've had too much drink, let us know. We'll call you a cab. You know, all that stuff. Because once it's midnight, they're not listening to that shit.
Yeah.
So the MC gets all that in. Then all the comics come out. So in this case, Billy Ray Bauer, Jeff Dwoskin, Dan Britton, the MC.
Right.
And, you know, and Dan Britton had downloaded. I had him download one of those, you know, countdown app things.
Yeah.
So we knew exactly when it was going to be midnight. And Dan was on the mic, and the comics were up there. And at midnight, we turned on all the house lights. Everyone stood up, counted down, and then I hit the CD player, played "Auld Lang Syne."
Did people sing along?
Yeah,
they
all hugged each other, and it was great.
Cool. Did you have a post party out in the bar area?
You know, it was employees could have drinks if they wanted to on that night. You know, the club.
You didn't
gave
try
us
to
a
hold
drink.
The customers
when everyone was gone. No, they hung out for about another. Some of them didn't leave for 30 minutes after the show.
Oh, okay.
You know, and we weren't kicking people out. We had all the stuff to clean up, all the nonsense.
Yeah.
New Year's Eve at Comedy Castle is a good time.
Can you
come out? And if I may plug something, just because we're plugging things,
okay.
And it is my show. This is the most appropriate show for me to talk about this. Dan Britton, the MC for that weekend, is a graduate, a two-time taker of the advanced comedy class in Mark Ridley's Comedy Castle. And he is now, you know, he took that class probably for the first time about 2 years ago. He's now the New Year's Eve MC.
That's crazy.
And I'm not saying, you know, and I didn't get him the gig. You know, Mark Ridley books the club.
You're just saying you made him good. And I agree.
I helped him get there. And if you take my class, you could be the New Year's Eve MC.
Yeah, I've taken it twice, and I'm doing podcasts out of my house.
You're hanging out with your dog. But you could have been there.
There are many paths.
You know, and like I said, Billy Ray Bauer was just on this show. Not that he did a class.
He probably did a great job.
He did a great job. He's funny.
What a nice
and here's
guy.
Here's the funny story, and this is a good comedy lesson. In addition to taking the advanced comedy class, that starts January 11th. So just in a week or so. January 11th on Saturday, take the advanced comedy class. Last time I checked, there were two available spots.
Yeah.
So we were running out of space.
I've taken it twice.
Yeah, you like it.
Yeah, it's a great class. A lot of information.
So Billy Ray Bauer ended up being our headliner. Here's a funny story. You know this already, but let's tell the audience. We had our headliner. I won't mention the headliner's name, but, you know, she didn't do anything wrong. But we had this headliner, female headliner, and she got ill. A couple days before the show, I think it was on Saturday afternoon, we get a call. A headliner can't make it. From out of town, flying in for the show, just working the two New Year's Eve shows, can't make the show.
Sounds like one of my dates. You got ghosted.
She was going to see Star Wars.
Yeah.
So she can't make it in. It's a Saturday afternoon. This is 3 days before New Year's Eve.
Right.
What do we do? I get this, you know, we get this call. turns out on Friday night, we had Mike Bonner, who I do 9:10 a.m. with every Tuesday
right,
night.
Great guy.
Had his Uptown Friday night, his final Uptown Friday night at the Comedy Castle. Billy Ray Bauer, who you guys will know from guesting a couple episodes ago and, you know, over the years, was just hanging out to watch the show. We're literally peeing in urinals. I say to Billy, what are you doing New Year's Eve? He says, I'm not doing anything. I said, really? I said, you're like a New Year's Eve. You always work New Year's Eve. He said, nah, you know, this year I didn't really feel like traveling. If there's a local gig and somebody wants to call me last minute, I'll come do it.
So hold it.
You
got your dicks out.
Got our dicks
and what
out.
You want to bring
got our
up,
dicks out.
What are your party plans,
well,
dude?
Well, you know, you're trying to have small talk when you're peeing next
no,
to each
you're
other.
Not.
And
no,
with
you're
my
not.
Penis, it's always small talk.
But <Ba-dum-bum. laughs>
So we're standing there peeing and we're just making small talk. And then the next afternoon, we get a call. The headliner's sick. And, you know, Mary, our general manager, had taken the call, and she hangs up, and she goes, oh, we got to get somebody for New Year's Eve. And I go, Billy Ray Bauer's available. I talked to him last night.
In the restroom.
In the restroom.
Yeah.
We were peeing. We had a laugh about
and
it.
And nobody lies when they get their dicks out.
And Billy, we called Billy, and next thing you know, he's there. It was one.
That's great.
It's a Christmas miracle.
And, you know, it worked out for everybody, didn't
and
it?
And Billy's an awesome act. You should come. I mean, especially there for our crowd. Because yeah, the New Year's Eve, I mean, a comedy club crowd's a little bit older. And then a New Year's Eve crowd's even a little bit older than that.
Really?
Yeah, and they're all couples. And Billy just, you know, and he's from Detroit. And he has all the local references.
And he's really
just
relaxed. Yeah, his style is really relaxed.
He's a really great act. And I'm sure the lady that was booked would have done a great job as well. But Billy really knocked it out of the park. So.
Yeah.
Shout out to him. And I'm glad I could be a small part, again, insert penis joke here.
Yeah.
A small part of having him get booked was that.
And you are kind of the hub.
But
another small penis joke.
The comedy lesson is,
yes,
if you're hanging around the comedy club,
hang out.
Something good might happen.
Hang
because,
out.
Because, you know, I would have assumed Billy Ray was working. And so if you were to said, who can work New Year's Eve? I would have been like, well, Billy Ray Bauer's working. You know, Bill Hildebrandt's working. Norm Stoltz is working. These guys are all working. Mike Green's working. Then it turned into, well, I know Billy Ray's not working. And it, you know, what could have taken us a day to book took us like 20 minutes.
So you're telling me if Billy Ray wasn't there and I was peeing next to you 2 days, you would have called me up and said, we got a headlining gig. Yeah, I don't think that would have happened.
If we were peeing and I knew we needed a New Year's Eve headliner, I'd say, Ted,
we can move everybody over and you can host.
I would have said, Ted, who do you know that can headline?
Exactly.
You know anybody?
Exactly.
We're fucked. If you know anybody, let us know.
You're going up, Joel.
And then I did tell Billy, I said, hey, man, I'll take cash, credit, Venmo, check.
Yeah,
I'll take
exactly.
Percentage. My
was
finder's
15?
Fee. 15% agent fee. Oh,
yeah.
I got none of that.
Yeah.
But Billy's my friend. He's a great act. It was a really fun New Year's Eve. And I know Dan was thrilled. So shout out to Dan Britton because he's a real, real funny comic. And, you know, he's there playing probably to the biggest, you know, we had two sellout shows playing two of the biggest crowds he's ever played to.
How long has he been doing comedy?
You know, he's gone. He was an improv guy. For years and years, and that's how I met him years ago doing an open mic. And in fact, he was on this podcast I used to record. If you go way back in the archives now, probably 5 years at least, I used to do the O'Mara's Comedy Night. And you ever do the O'Mara's Comedy Night?
No.
Probably before I met you.
No,
and
no.
I used to tape them and put them on this show.
Yeah.
And I had, you know, I had guys like Brad Wenzel and that, you know, before they were
right,
you know,
right.
Anything.
What do you think about the transition between improv and stand-up comedy?
You know, they're very, very different.
I agree.
Some people are good at both. Some people prefer one or the other. You know, when I got into stand-up, I didn't do any improv, and I got into stand-up, and I said to Bill Hildebrandt, I said, Bill, should I be an improv guy? And should I take some improv classes? He said, do you want to split the check five ways?
Oh, there
and
you
I go. That's a good point.
Yeah,
and I did not want to split the check five ways. And I know how small the check is, even for me to split five ways. You know, that was his way of dealing with it. What I found is that there are really good people with improv backgrounds. That at the minimum, what you get from doing improv is you feel more comfortable on stage.
Yeah.
Any kind of public speaking is really good for stand-up.
Right.
Whatever your background is, sales guys, teachers, you know, professors, people that I had an elementary school principal. Smooth as silk on the mic because he always gets up and talks.
Right,
you know?
Right.
Probably talks every day, does that announcement in the morning.
Yeah, but you know what? I think the funny is different in improv.
Well, the funny is different.
And
now look, here's the other thing about improv, and I know this from I've worked with lots of improv troops, and lots of good ones and some crappy ones. there's usually, you know, there's a five-guy improv troupe. Two of those people are really good.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, they
and
carry
so,
it.
And so, now look, if you're not good, you're very happy to be in that improv troupe.
Right.
Say, oh, man, I got Joel and Ted in the improv troupe. We're going to be great. You know,
yeah,
I don't have to worry about anything. But, you know, if you're the great guy, if you're the really good guy, and you got to look around and go, oh, fuck, I got to work with these three assholes again. You know, so I think there's some of that that happens.
Yeah, you're playing rhythm in the band.
Yeah.
You aren't playing lead. Yeah, but I think that's good. The band needs somebody playing rhythm and improv, needs some other people to fill and to ask questions. I think that's good. But I did do some stand-up comedy with a girl that had just transferred over to stand up from
that could have went a whole different
way. Yeah, I know. Oopsie.
Yeah.
Anyhow, and we drove to Grand Rapids, and I might have told you this before, but on the way over, she was so new and she hadn't done much stand up, and it was a contest in Grand Rapids.
Yeah.
And I said, well, you got to do 7 minutes. How many jokes are you going to tell in 7 minutes? I mean, how many punchlines?
Yeah.
She said 4.
Yeah.
And I said, oh, my God.
How'd that go?
She said, what about you? And I said, last I counted, there was 52 laugh spots. Now, not all of them hit,
sure,
but if I get 20 to hit, that's great. You know, and it was, and she did. She talked for a long time, then she paused for a laugh. And I think that's the nature of improv.
Yeah.
I think it's a different skill set.
It is, yeah. I mean, it's a good, you know, improv is great training for acting, you know, commercials, film, stage. Because, boy, when I was doing all those auditions for commercials and stuff and movie roles, those improv guys were getting all those roles and I was not.
Really?
You know, and I mean, I lucked into that, the one feature thing, the 5-year engagement. I lucked into that.
Right, right.
That was because I was on the set and the director thought it was funny.
Yeah.
Just looking at me.
Yeah.
He was right.
Yeah. Well, you know, I went down to American Idol and you had to be funny in two minutes.
Yeah, it's tough.
I'd be funny 2 minutes. Yeah. Go. Yeah. You know, it was that kind of thing. So
I think improv, you know, and that's something I teach in my class. Like, do people, you know, it's one of the topics I bring about. Do you need improv? And I don't think you do. I think there is some improvisation that happens in stand-up, but stand-up is scripted. It should be the best stand-up you will ever see is not a guy going in the crowd saying, hey, sir, what do you do for a living?
Right.
That's not good comedy. Good comedy is something that you've prepared, that you've rehearsed. You want it to sound spontaneous, but it should be something that you know
but
that
I think
you are going to do.
That's really important that you transition into it in a way where it sounds like you're just communicating. You're just talking. It doesn't sound scripted. The real talented people sound like they're just talking.
But go to an improv show.
You know what? I did Second City. I went down and did a class down there. I sucked.
No.
I am not good at improv. They said,
well,
okay,
but improv
you're a tree growing in the middle of the highway. Go. And I thought, I got nothing.
But when you do those improv shows, you go to these improv shows, and they look for a suggestion from the audience. It's almost always you're going to hear going to the bathroom.
Yeah.
So you know that guy that's on stage, if you've seen enough improv, know that going to the bathroom is something that he's done 500 times on stage. So not unlike our jokes that we've done a million times and our old hat to us, and we know we're going to work.
How many people are married? You know you're going to get
when
this
guy's
answer
doing
that,
in the bathroom, brushing your teeth, you know?
Yeah.
You're at, where are we? You're at work.
Yeah.
Okay.
Holler,
and they have the same shit they can pull out. It's
holler
not,
out a suggestion. Oh, yeah, I heard bathroom.
Yeah, there's that, too.
Yeah.
I heard, enough people in there. But, you know, improv, the other thing about improv, too, is, and look, SNL, we'll talk about SNL in a minute, but SNL, you know, they use improvers, they use occasional stand-ups. Most of their people that get hired are improvers or actors. So if that's the route you want to go, study improv. I don't think you get better at stand-up by doing improv. That's another, I think, fallacy that people have. Oh, I'm doing stand-up, I need a little more experience, I need a little something to kick me in the ass, I'll go take improv. If you want to be good at stand-up, do more stand-up. And you can't do more stand-up while you're at improv class for 3 hours a night.
Right.
You know, you want to be better at stand-up, do more stand-up.
Right.
Don't go do improv as a way to get better at stand-up. Do more stand-up. Now you could say that you're going to learn things that you wouldn't learn in improv if those are skills you want. It's sort of like, okay, we're both learning how to play the guitar.
Right.
And you also play the piano.
Right.
And I think the knowledge of piano helps you play guitar and vice versa. But if I want to get better at guitar, I'm not going to go play piano right now.
Right.
Maybe in 3-4 years, I would go, let's try some piano.
Right.
But I don't think it would help me play the guitar right now. I should be playing
the
guitar.
You need the basics. Yeah,
I should be playing the guitar. So I don't think improv is really a thing that's going to help your stand-up necessarily in that way. So anyway. I'll get off that topic.
All right.
That's although it's funny, I was talking to somebody today. I came up with a new term. I think we've come up with this. Didn't we talk about clicks on the last show?
Yeah, comedy clicks.
Well, here's what I've come up with, and you tell me if this works. Maybe this sticks. Maybe I've come up with this. I don't know. It was in conversation with somebody else. Can't take all the credit, but that person will remain nameless.
Okay.
We were talking about comedy and, you know, what people are in for it and what people are looking to do with it now and, you know, the venues that people are playing and open mics and that.
Right.
And I've come up with, we now should tell ourselves, people saying I'm a stand-up comic. And they say that. And it's because they've done a couple of mics. Maybe they did a class. I'm a stand-up comedian. I'm a stand-up comedian. To me, stand-up comedian, stand-up comedy is an art form, no doubt about it, no question about it. I think being a stand-up comedian, however, is a trade. I feel it is a trade like being a plumber. I feel like it is a trade like being an electrician or a carpenter or whatever you want to say. It is a skilled trade. It is something that you do. You are an independent contractor. You go out. You take these gigs.
Right.
Independent. You learn your skills. If you were a plumber and someone said to you, I got this plumber that's been doing it for 20 years. He wants to teach you how to do plumbing. No one would think that was weird at all or whatsoever.
Right.
But you say comedy. Hey, this guy's been doing comedy for 20 years. He can help you with your stand-up if you take his class. And he goes, oh, that seems like a big ripoff. What the fuck is that? Doesn't make any sense to me. So that's one of my things. So I've come up with this. You tell me if this works for you, Ted. And you tell me where you stand on this. Would this fit you or not? I've come up with a term that people should call themselves.
Okay.
I am a, what these people should say instead of a comedian, if not, I am a not-for-profit comedian.
No.
That's what people should say from here on out.
No.
Tell me if that'll catch on or not.
Well, I'll tell you what, that's going to be almost everybody doing comedy.
Well, I mean,
almost everybody is not making a living.
I understand
by doing
that.
Comedy.
But is it that people are not making an effort? Or is it that there are people that don't want to be? Because if you are that person, if you are that person who goes, you know, I'm going to go run some open mic somewhere. I'm going to run some show. I don't get any money for it. And we don't pay anybody. And we're just doing it for fun. You're not for profit. You're not in the same business as me. You're doing something because you like to do it. It's your hobby. You're not for profit. You're still a comedian. You're just a not for profit comedian. I am a for-profit comedian. I am doing comedy in order to pay my bills, to take care of my family, to pay for my house, to, you know, put food in my belly.
I don't think that's the line.
I think it is.
Well, no, here, let me tell you.
All right.
Okay, I wrote a book.
You did.
And while I was writing the book,
yes.
I considered myself a writer because I was writing.
Okay.
But once I got Once I got the book online, mm-hmm. And I'm selling the book for $17, the hard copies for $27, yeah. I'm an author.
You're an author. Okay.
Okay.
I like that.
I think there's a distinction between a writer and an author.
Sure.
But now I don't work at that at all. I don't promote that at all.
But
the ebook I sell for 99 cents.
Uh-huh.
Not exactly a for-profit thing.
Yeah.
But I still say,
sure,
I'm an author. I'm a published author.
Okay.
Also,
but
I'll tell you,
isn't the word unpublished and published a thing in that world, though? That is a distinction that people already make. We don't make that distinction in comedy. That's what I'm trying to get people to do.
I know. Well, here, my ex-wife had a degree in interior design.
Okay.
From Michigan State University, yeah. And then she had to go out and practice for 3 years, and she comes back and takes a certification test.
Okay.
I took a sample certification test with her when I was doing commercial lighting design,
yeah.
And the test takes about 5 hours. It's very, very difficult.
Okay.
It's not easy.
Yeah.
In my dating life, I've run into a lot of ladies that say, I'm an interior designer.
Okay.
That's what they say. I'm an interior designer.
Yeah.
And I go, oh, cool. Are you ASID certified? They have no freaking clue.
Hey, no wonder you're alone.
Then they ghost me. So I think there's a difference between I'm an interior designer.
All right.
And I do interior design. That's the distinction in comedy. I'm a stand-up comedian, and I do stand-up comedy.
Yeah.
I think that's where the distinction is. But at some point, it's not about the money. If you've done 50, 70, 100 shows, I think you can say, I'm a stand-up comedian.
You are a not... Okay, but are you somebody that wants to work? Because I think people now feel like... There's a whole scene where guys are like, we love it so much. And we love it so much we don't need money, because I just love doing it. I love hanging out with my friends. I love telling these jokes. I like getting together and write these things. Yeah. I don't need money. I want to do this. You're not for profit.
Well, let me ask
That's
you.
That's okay. You're not, and I'm not putting those guys down. I'm saying you're not for profit. Let's draw the line there.
Okay.
Because when you're saying to me, and I hear this, and it's not always said to my face, but it is said behind my back about, you know, oh, I can't work the Comedy Castle, or, you know, Joel, you got to take Joel's class to get booked at the Comedy Castle, which couldn't be further from the truth. The fact of the matter is that, yeah, you're choosing to not make money. I'm going to tell you how to make money. If you take my class, you're going to choose not to. You're not for profit. Go ahead.
Okay. If you want to use that tag, let me ask you this.
Yeah.
Are you a podcaster, Joel?
I am a podcaster. I create a podcast.
I think you're a not-for-profit podcaster, Joel.
I agree with you 100%.
But you don't have to tell people.
I
disagree with the announcing of putting that adjective before the subject.
Well, I think it would make people a lot easier for people to describe what they do. Are you a comedian? I'm a comedian. Okay. Do you work? Well, I'm not for profit. Okay, cool. You're not for profit. Thank you.
Well, maybe they want to be for profit.
Yeah, not for profit.
Yeah, I don't know. Well, let's agree to disagree. I think saying I do stand-up comedy, but if you've done 50, if you've done 60, if you've been doing it for, you know, 3, 4, 5, 6, if you've done it for a number of years, I think it's okay to say I'm a stand-up comedian. Not a successful one, but that's what I do.
Stand-up comedian, but then people go, okay, did you, you know, if I said to you, if you meet a guy and you go, I'm a plumber. Oh, you're a plumber. Well, you know.
Well, there's journeyman plumbers.
What is a gentleman plumber?
Journeyman.
Journeyman.
There's journeyman. There's certifications for plumbers. There's certification for electricians.
So what's a gentleman plumber? That's what I want to meet.
Yeah.
A guy in a tux.
On the toilet.
Comes over with a...
No, there's certifications for all that stuff.
Yeah.
In order to become a journeyman electrician, you need to have either a master's degree or so much experience.
Wow.
And then you test into it and you become a certified... You know, electrician, then you can be a commercial electrician and get a license. And plumber's the same thing.
Is it?
Yes. There's no certification for stand-up comedy.
There isn't, but if you're not making money, I don't know. If you're not making money and you never want to make money and you're not interested in that, then it's not a matter of for profit.
Yeah.
That's fine. Just be that. Stop whining and complaining about what you are and what you aren't. That's what you are.
They're all comedians.
That's what you chose to do.
You are just not happy that there's so many comedians out there.
I like comedians.
You're making a living off people who want to be comedians.
I'm making a living off of that.
Well, partially. You're making more money off wannabe stand-up comedians than you are off podcasting.
Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
Not podcasting. It's not a thing that you're going to make money with unless you really want to, you know. I don't want to work hard, as evidenced by this show that we're listening to.
I'd be more entertaining.
No, I think the thing about podcasting is, you know, when you've got advertisers and you've got, you know, advertisers want numbers. Advertisers want you to say, I need this many listens. You know, you're going to get paid on your listens.
Sure.
And they're going to say, I need content weekly. I want 2 minutes. Once a week on your show, and you better have 10,000 listeners because you're not going to get your money. And I don't know what it is. I think it's is it a penny a listener? Is that what it is?
I have no idea.
It's $50 per 1,000 listeners, or is it five? It's something like that.
I don't know.
Something like that.
I have no idea.
No, is it?
I haven't even thought about monetizing.
There is some, you know, rate the cents per minute, whatever it is, for podcasting, where there is, you know, how many listeners do you have in a measurable way,
right?
And then you divide that into what you should get paid for an ad on your shows, and there's kind of a standard rate now that people have figured out. I don't want any of that. I don't want a boss. I don't want to be beholden to some, you know, thing. And you got to worry about your content. You know, it's very controversial. I don't think we can sell.
I don't know.
I don't think we can sell White Claws on the Joel Radio podcast.
Joel Rogan, one of his early sponsors was a Fleshlight.
Okay, and that's fine.
And 50% of their sales were tagged with Joel Rogan.
Okay.
And that's kind of on the
edge. But if he wants to get Cadillac or Buick, they're probably not going to want a Fleshlight ad on the same show.
He's at the point where he's turning people away. You know, it's
First of all, good for Joe Rogan. I spite him not at all. But Joe Rogan, that is his job. That is his career. I'm a not-for-profit podcaster, man. I'm having fun. I'm talking to you. I'm drinking coffee.
You're just doing
podcasts.
We're
doing our things, man. And that's okay. I get paid to do comedy. I go on the radio. I don't get paid for that gig. I'm a guest of Mike Bonner.
Yeah, you're multitasking.
I got a lot of jobs. I hustle.
Yeah.
I hustle.
Yeah.
Yeah. I have to hustle. But I think I'm ready to start with that. You know, you're not for profit, and that's okay.
We'll see if that catches on.
I think it will.
Get back with me.
I will. I'll let you know. I'll let you know when that's taken on. You heard it here first.
All right.
God damn it, I innovated this podcast shit, man. I'm going to interview some not-for-profit stuff.
Let me teach this in my class.
Shit.
Let me tell you what you guys can
do a podcasting class. That's where I'd make the money.
You should podcast one of your classes,
one of the reasons I wouldn't do podcasting.
Oh, because it'd be free then.
Well, people, no, that's not the point. First of all, the show that I sometimes still will post is I think I had you and Steve Hansen on talking about the class once, didn't
we? Well, we were
you guys, yeah.
It's because we praised it.
Yeah.
I don't blame you.
We talked about it.
It was a good class.
A good class. Yeah.
I took it twice.
Yeah, good.
But I don't catch on that quickly because I'm just doing stand-up.
Yeah, believe me, you doing it twice makes you the 32nd most frequent taker of my class because there are people that have done it.
I might have been
easily
the first
done
one.
It a dozen times.
I might have been
you
the first
been.
One to do
you,
it twice.
You might have been. That's impossible.
And matter of fact,
possible.
I was in probably your second or third
I think
third
you
class.
Might have been in my second or third, yes.
Yeah, because I was pushing Bill to do something about it.
Yeah.
Matter of fact.
Yeah, Ted.
I was taking a pee.
Take all the credit.
I was taking a pee.
Oh, we were taking pees now?
Next to Bill
next
Bouchard.
Next to Bill Bouchard?
And I said, Bill, have you ever thought about doing an advanced class? And he said, I'm so busy. I said, geez, I wonder if we can find somebody who's not so busy. And next thing you know, you got an advanced class.
Bill Bouchard said, that sounds like work. Let's let Joel do it. I enjoy teaching. That's
so you're welcome. I have never even gotten a thank you for that.
Well, thank you, Ted.
Well, you're welcome.
And thank you for the drone.
Oh, you're welcome.
I got a little drone helicopter from
the
Ted.
Way you get on this show is by sucking up to Joel. It's like getting on. I'm hoping I give him something nice enough to get on as a feature act at the Comedy Castle.
I was
going to
say, should
someday.
We announce your feature weekend here? That I just
on the
for?
Podcast?
No, we did not do that. I like this. This is a pocket drone. I don't know the make or model of this, but it's. You said you had one of these, huh?
I do. I have one.
You have the. Now, you've flown it.
Briefly, I've flown it a few times. As soon as I put it in the air, it attacked me. It came right at me, and I thought, how do we land it? So learn the down button before you learn the up button.
Down button.
Yeah.
ES-8, upgrade version 2. It looks cool.
It's very cool. And it has some automatic things where it'll flip upside down and flip
so
right
the
side up.
Remote
it's got a camera.
Yeah, the remote kind of holds your phone, huh?
Yeah, yeah. So you're looking at the screen on your phone, and it shows you what the camera's looking at as the thing goes up in the air.
Does it work with an Android phone? Do you have to have a specific model?
No. No, it's a cool little thing.
I'll open it later.
I've got a thing about gift giving. Yeah,
it's very nice of you.
I like giving gifts to people who are not expecting gifts.
Yeah, I didn't expect a gift.
Yeah, and I hate, you know, when you're giving a gift on somebody's birthday, they're like, you're supposed to give it, or a wedding, you're supposed to. But if you just show up someplace with a gift for somebody.
That's
and
cool.
It doesn't have to be a big gift. It can be a $20 gift.
I got nothing for you.
And people, people really remember that. People
they do. That's right.
I think that's the good thing to do. That's how you give gifts, not on Christmas. So for Christmas, everybody's getting nothing from now on.
Well, we were going to talk. I think we've gone past this point. We mentioned it. You will have your own podcast. It'll be happening soon. We'll talk about it when it happens. How's
yes.
Because I'm going to be your guest. I've already agreed to
guest. I know. I'm thrilled
I'm looking
about that.
Forward to that, actually.
I know.
I'm gonna
that way. That way, I can dominate the conversation.
Do I dominate the conversation?
Look,
keep it down over there.
I don't know.
No.
We'll put the stopwatch on.
Who talks more, me or you?
Yeah, or faster.
I think you make me talk faster because I got to keep up with you.
I make you anxious.
Yeah.
You and my first wife. Just saw her out in Napa. That was very interesting.
You went and did you on purpose here?
Well, she had a daughter after we were divorced who spent a lot of time at my house with my kids because they were her only siblings, holidays, nights, whatever, as she was growing up. So she's kind of like a stepdaughter.
Okay.
And she married into a very wealthy family
that
had like what we would think of as a lake house
yeah.
on a vineyard in Napa.
Yeah.
And so wow. she was getting married, and I flew out to that.
Oh.
A great family. I'm very, very, very wealthy people. He might be the biggest coin trader, rare coin trader
oh, okay.
in the country. He's done, I can't remember if it's $2 or $3 billion worth of trades.
No.
But I did look up, he sold the coin.
He is for profit.
Yes. He sold the coin for $9,800,000.
Yeah, okay.
One coin. So, yeah. But That's it was nice. A really cool thing, and I got to go out there, and I got to hang around with my first wife,
oh.
which I have not done in 30 years.
How did we get on this topic? Your podcast.
Yeah, my podcast.
Oh, because I remind you of your ex-wife.
No, well, our interaction, kind of. Yeah, she looks a lot.
Who has a bigger mustache?
Well,
me or
without
her.
The beard.
Yeah, yeah, there you go.
Yeah, she shaves her short.
I'm growing a beard.
She did have a mole removed, though. I like that. She had a mole on her upper lip, and that's gone now. I thought, well, there's a new look. Good for you.
So this rich family is like removing moles.
No,
vineyard.
No, no,
that's what.
No,
I'm
her thinking. Daughter's gorgeous. Nice people
right.
too. Super nice.
I believe you. All right, let's move on.
Yes.
So Ted's going to do his own podcast. We'll talk about that. He bought the equipment. We've been talking. You were asking me about output formats and things.
Yeah, yeah. There's lots I don't know.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
I think here's what I say, and I know lots of people listen to the show, and some people who are. Audio people or radio people, X-radio people listen. They say the show sounds great, so I'm doing something right. Well, even if I'm an idiot and you don't like me, I think the audio quality is pretty darn good on this little show.
So the people that connect you with you are not connecting to tell you how bad the show sounds. Are these people who want to have time and
yeah.
Mark Ridley's?
What happens is I ask people, what'd you think of the podcast? And they go, that audio quality was fantastic.
Yeah, content.
Yeah, they're just like, so yeah, you know, it's
right.
just like,
right.
what'd you think of that?
Well,
it's a smooth download,
yeah, yeah,
Joel.
Yeah.
It didn't, came real quick. And
how do I look, honey? Love your shoes. The shoes are great. No, the shoes don't make you look fat.
How do I look? Nice earrings.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly.
That's the thing, yeah.
Exactly. Find a compliment.
But so I think if you take my advice and that stuff, you know, you'll have a nice sounding show. I know you bought nice equipment, and
we'll see.
And the thing is, if you make your file too big, then it's annoying for people to try to download, especially if they're on the go. So you want to keep it kind of, you got 64K mono, baby. That's
okay.
what I am all about that.
Okay.
I used to be 48K mono. I bumped it up.
Yeah.
As time has gone on. I probably did like the first year or so at 48K.
Yeah.
But the other thing I told you is always save a higher quality version.
For editing. Yeah.
Well, for editing purposes, if you ever want to do a best of for a reel or for YouTube or something, you can use that as your source versus the MP3 because there is a quality difference.
Right.
Most people won't know listening to it on their headphones or whatever, but for your purposes, you could make a higher quality version on the road. Or what you might find out is that, okay, technology is moving on to where a 64K download is you know, nothing, and so why
right.
not make it a higher quality just because you can, and then you'll have those higher quality versions.
Right. Well, I'm saving the working copy well as the MP3
yeah,
final
it'll start
copy,
to eat up your hard drive, and some people try to, you know, oh, man, I got all these
yeah, hard
things.
Drives are pretty cheap.
I know, but that's the thing. See, I started the show 15 years ago. That was a consideration.
Yeah.
Was hard drive space.
Yeah.
You know, the show could only, our show, we were only doing 70 minutes when it was
yeah.
the Corey and Joel radio show for like years and years because there were fans that were burning them onto CD
oh.
and putting them in their car on a CD and
oh,
they're like
no.
we can't have
yeah,
more
yeah,
than
yeah.
70 minutes on CD
yeah right.
so we would look at the we'd be watching the clock going hey man it's time to go it's almost you know
right
so you know that consideration has gone out the window
yeah.
so you know technology changes but you know good sound quality lives on so
yeah.
have good quality anyway
all right
speaking of quality or lack thereof.
Okay.
Saturday Night Live brought back Eddie Murphy a couple weeks ago. It was the final episode of the year of Saturday Night Live. I've heard it was the highest rated Saturday Night Live in years and years on that show. I think when Sarah Palin appeared mid-campaign in 2008, I think it was, when she was John McCain's running mate.
Right.
And she came on because Tina Fey was doing her impression, and everyone got really hyped for that. And everyone got really hyped for Eddie Murphy coming back.
Right.
You saw at least some of the show. What were your thoughts?
Well, yeah, actually, I got into a little debate on about the show.
Okay.
With Billy Reno.
Okay.
He had texted me and said, hey, did you see this? It's hilarious.
What did Billy think of it?
Billy loved the show.
Okay.
And
all right. Well, who's going to call Billy an idiot first?
Exactly.
Me or you? Well, you go first.
I think everybody has. Just take a number. But as far
we love Billy, but you're wrong on this one, pal.
Well, you know what? If I want to watch a rerun of years ago when Eddie Murphy was on Saturday Night Live, those are available.
Yeah.
And to say, you know what I want? Not only do I want a rerun, but I want him to be older and fatter in the rerun. And that's exactly what I got.
Well,
he did all the old characters.
Yeah. And that's what people want.
And you know what? His opening was so bad, they had to actually bring other people on to carry him.
Well, that's not uncommon to have guests at the
monologue. He also made some grammatical mistakes in the opening.
Grammatical?
Yeah, like that.
That's funny that you would get that word
is,
wrong.
That's hilarious.
I think I'm right on that, but anyway, okay,
anyhow,
grammatical.
Anyhow, he said some things, and I thought, well, that's not... Oh, he said...
He's probably reading a cue card.
Yeah, I'm glad we are here to make me feel welcome. Instead of you are, or something like that. And I thought, well, that's kind of awkward.
Right,
but then they went into the skits.
He was probably nervous.
And he's the Jewish Gumby.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, all right. Seen it.
Yeah.
Seen it. Done
Mr.
better.
Mr. Robinson's Neighborhood.
Yeah, you know.
My feeling is that...
Why are we doing this?
I did not think it was a very good show. I thought Eddie Murphy's opening wasn't really all that funny. To have Chris Rock and Chappelle and Tracy Morgan out there with you, I thought was kind of cool as a visual.
It's neat to see,
you know.
but they're carrying them.
Yeah.
The reason is because he can't do it without them.
They did one great sketch on the show, and it wasn't even a sketch. It was their little film that they make, and they do a few of those, you know, a pre-tape thing. The home for the holidays and all the families.
I did not see that.
That was really funny. Maya Rudolph was his wife. Eddie was the dad.
Yeah.
Kenan Thompson played Grandpa.
Okay.
Basically, they were giving a toast, and Eddie Murphy stands up to toast everybody at the holiday and Christmas thing. He says, well, it's so great to have everybody here, and Dad, thanks for coming and hanging out with us. And then they do a cutaway, and like you just see Dad sleeping, falling asleep in his chair.
Right.
You know, so everybody's like talking out of their ass, and you see their real thoughts in the cutaway. And it was funny.
That's
it
funny.
Was funny. You can look up that sketch. That was really funny. I thought that was really good.
Well, that's a new concept, too.
I agree. Eddie Murphy doing the old characters did nothing for me.
It just didn't. I think it's sad too, because I want Eddie to do good.
I do too.
And I actually watched him on the Cars and Coffee show.
Yeah, Comedians and Cars.
Yeah. And
he didn't have a lot to say.
Well, he did say he'd like to do it again, but he's a little bit concerned about the material.
I think Netflix is going to give him a bunch of money to do a stand-up special. I think that's already in the works.
Does he need more money?
Everybody needs money.
Apparently he's a for-profit comedian.
Believe me, when you're making Dr. Doolittle 3 or whatever the fuck he's making.
I remember when
that's for-profit.
Yeah. He got booed out of Flint.
Yeah?
Pretty much. Yeah, when he performed in Flint, he got heckled at the theater.
Wow, I don't remember that story.
And eventually he came back with, I'm going to take out my wallet with all the money and crush you with it. And I thought, oh, you're in fucking Flint, Michigan. Don't do that. That's bad.
Eddie's stand-up. I mean, you know, and I saw an interview with him. He did CBS This Morning.
Is he a stand-up comedian, though, really?
Well,
is that what he does? Or is he a skit comedian?
They were talking about his, you know, gay jokes that he would do. You know, like he did a thing, and I've played these Eddie Murphy clips over the years on this show. I'm not going to rehash it, but you know, he comes out and he says, "I'm gonna move around fast on stage, so faggots don't start staring at my ass."
Yeah,
like, that's the opening of Eddie Murphy Delirious. It's like the first bit he does. And it's like, that's horrible in today's society.
Yeah,
to say something like that.
Yeah,
and he goes, you know, I'm embarrassed by that. I don't know why I did that. I was a young guy, and you know, he apologized for it.
I know. Why would that group of people be staring? I can't believe
So I don't think that's what he's going to do for stand-up. And I think he'll have very good people around him to make sure that his stand-up isn't bad. And people will be excited just to see him. You know, if you go to an Eddie Murphy show, you know, you're going to give Eddie a good 15 minutes of, I can't believe I'm watching Eddie Murphy doing stand-up. And then he better be good. Because a lot of people, you know, they're going to get on the Twitter and the Facebook and slam him.
Well, did he write these skits?
I believe Eddie wrote his stuff. I think so. I don't know if he had help. You know, his brother Charlie might have done some of that. I mean, Charlie passed away.
Right.
By the way, I got one of the best times I ever had getting high was with Charlie Murphy at the Gathering of the Juggalos. That's a story for another day. But I sat in a trailer with Charlie Murphy and got high as a kite. It was great.
He was a not-for-profit stoner.
Charlie was a not-for-writing-an-act comedian. Let me put it to you that way. But he was a fun guy. I love Charlie Murphy.
Yeah.
Yeah, Charlie Murphy was cool.
Oh, that's very cool.
Yeah, but Eddie, you know, I think Eddie, he'll...
I don't think he's a stand-up comedian. I just don't think that's what he does.
Yeah, I agree with you.
I think he's a skit comedian. I think he's a pretty good actor, you know? I think
I'm almost curious enough if tickets went on sale to get an Eddie Murphy stand-up comedy ticket. Almost. Probably going to be like $300, so I'm probably not going to go.
You know, what was the show he did where he wore the red leather pants and he was pissed off?
That was Delirious. Well, he did Delirious and he did Raw.
Raw.
Raw is the purple leather outfit.
Okay. Okay.
Delirious is the
okay.
red leather outfit okay. if you're trying to keep these straight.
Angry, but entertaining. You know, I thought those were good.
Yeah, yeah.
But they were highly produced.
They were.
You know?
Yeah.
And, I think he's probably a nice guy. And that's hard to say when somebody has that kind of money.
I don't know that he's a bad guy. I haven't heard things about Eddie being a bad guy. I think we know some of the same people. And
I think he needed more preparation to be on the show. But, and they should have had some other skits.
I agree. The show wasn't
digging
great.
Digging up old skits
but like I said,
doesn't do it for me.
People were happy that he was on the show. And when people like Billy Reno go, I saw Eddie Murphy on SNL. It was the greatest thing.
Well, he didn't say it was the greatest thing.
Because
he
remember it from when you were a kid.
Yeah.
It wasn't that he was all that funny on the show because he really wasn't.
Yeah.
And let's face it, SNL's not that funny. I've never been a big SNL.
Well, you know, I used to be a long distance runner, but you don't want to film me running long distance at my age now.
Yeah.
It would not be entertaining.
Yeah.
That would not be the same.
I've heard this term thrown around, but they say, you know, you lose your fastball. And I think that happens with comics. I think you lose your fastball.
Yeah.
And you're not the same guy.
Yeah.
Or, you know, sometimes it's just the way the audience views you. You know, Eddie now has been around for so long that it's pure nostalgia at this point.
Yeah.
And I don't know that young people are going to give a shit about Eddie Murphy.
Yeah, but, you know, I think style of comedy has morphed, too.
That's true.
I think some of the old stuff that worked way back when.
Yeah,
I think,
oh, absolutely.
Yeah, Steve Martin and a lot of that stuff
but
would not work
here's
anymore,
the other thing about stand-up, and I think this is true. And I do believe that this is a lot of people's excuses that are not good comedians, because I think it is true to their act, but I think comedy only needs to serve the audience that you're in front of. You know, you don't need to write comedy that, you know, you can't consider the audience in 20 years for the stuff you're about to do tomorrow night.
Yeah.
You know, if you've got a gig at an Elks Lodge tomorrow night, the audience for those jokes are those guys at that Elks Lodge on that night. So I don't think you can hold comedy up to, boy, if I did this on Twitter, what are they going to think? And I'm going to make a video of this and put it on YouTube, and I want a lot of likes for it. It's like, you got to play to that audience that you have right there in front of you, and that's your obligation. So, yeah, it's going to get out of date. And you're going to have references to things that aren't hip anymore and stuff. A good comedian will change their act for the times and be able to keep up. And that's why it's good when you keep doing it for years and years. And why guys like George Carlin were good in their old age, because they kept doing it. I don't think you can take a 20, 30-year break from comedy and come back and go, hey, here I am. You know, Steve Martin's back, but he's doing a two-man act with Martin Short.
Well, see, I think that makes more sense.
He's
doing something new.
He's doing something new, but I don't think he could do the wild and crazy. I think if Steve Martin did the wild and crazy guy, he'd be funny for 5 minutes, and then we'd be like, okay.
Yeah.
What else you got?
Well,
because I'm bored.
That was Saturday Night Live.
Yeah, it was Saturday Night Live with Eddie Murphy.
It's kind of cool. Okay, I remember Gumby. And,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Go away.
I agree.
Yeah.
But I did see his movie.
Yeah, I did not. How
Dolomite
was that?
Is My Name.
Yeah.
Well, it's about he plays Rudy Ray Moore, who made a movie called Dolomite. And what might be of more interest, if you didn't know this and you're a fan of the show, is that he was a stand-up comedian.
I think I saw this or part of this.
And he was a stand-up comedian.
Yeah.
It's on Netflix if you want to see Dolomite Is My Name.
Yeah, I think
it came out in October. I just got around to watching it. Even after SNL, I still watched it. I enjoyed Dolomite Is My Name. I thought they did a pretty good job with it. It is almost exactly, I don't know if it's because this other movie was a hit and people really liked that movie, but if you saw the movie The Disaster Artist, about the movie The Room.
No, I didn't see
that. With Tommy Wiseau. So that was James Franco.
Yeah.
His thing. It's kind of just that.
Yeah.
But with Dolomite instead of the room.
Well, he got stuck in the character, right?
Well, Dolomite was his stand. He made all these albums as Dolomite. He was a pimp, and he'd talk about his hoes and all this stuff. And I'm a fucking motherfucker up and all kind of shit like that.
And that's who he always had to be.
That's what the movie was. He was shooting guns and like beating guys up with...
Yeah.
He was kind of a fat old guy, and he was like doing karate and wasn't good at it. Yeah. So if you watch... I actually watched some of the original Dolomite after I saw the Dolomite Is My Name. The original Dolomite's on Amazon Prime if you want to watch the original 1975 movie.
Right.
Which I didn't make it through, but it was late at night.
Right.
You can watch that. And yeah, it's a terrible movie. Yeah. I mean, it's got some appeal as a, you know, a cult kitsch kind of 1970s blaxploitation pimp movie.
Right.
But I think Eddie's portrayal of him was pretty good. I thought the other actors, Wesley Snipes, speaking of, you know, guys who aren't doing much now, was very good in this. Keegan-Michael Key shows up in this. So it was good. It was a good... I was entertained by Dolomite Is My Name. I thought Eddie did a nice job. They might nominate him for an Oscar for that. I don't know.
But wasn't the...
But I thought it was very, very much just The Disaster Artist, which is a great movie. You might like Dolomite Is My Name more, but it's kind of the same shit.
Wasn't the crux of the story, though, that he couldn't get out of this character? This is what he did.
Not really. Not exactly.
Okay.
He's this guy. I mean, he was definitely, you definitely see in the movie that he was a phony. He was not a pimp. You know, he got these pimp stories from homeless guys.
But he was, but he got Rudy old Ray and Moore. Fat, and he wasn't able to even
He was
be
old
this.
And fat when he started, though. I mean, I think that's the thing, is that he was a musician. He wanted to be like James Brown.
Right.
And that's even the opening scene of the movie. He's trying to get his record played. Snoop Dogg's a DJ, and he's trying to get his record played. And he's like, you know, I was hot, and then James Brown came along and fucked my shit up. You know, Dolomite Is My Name was pretty good. It was written by the guys who wrote Ed Wood. Which is a great movie, and really good writing. And but again, I feel like had The Disaster Artist not come around a couple of years ago, I don't think this movie gets made. But having said that, I enjoyed Dolomite Is My Name. I think it's worth a look. Maybe Eddie gets nominated. I don't know. I watched it, though. It was fun. Girlfriend liked it.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was good.
Did it have small little cute creatures in it? I don't think so.
No, there was no... There was no Baby Yoda.
I was like
The Mandalorian.
I was wondering why.
I watched The Mandalorian.
Did you?
Did you like The Mandalorian? You didn't see that. That's on Disney Plus.
No.
The Star Wars episodic show.
Yeah.
That was good. That just wrapped up. That was good. I enjoyed that. Watch that. Here's a couple other TV. Well, let's do a couple more TV things. I know we did TV and then a movie.
All right.
A couple shows I think I've already talked about. This Watchmen on HBO, that ended great. I mean, one of the all-time great things all year was Watchmen. I'm trying to decide if I liked Watchmen or The Boys better. The Boys was a superhero show that was on Amazon Prime over the summer. And those were both really good. But Watchmen was weird. Sometimes it was hard to follow. But in the end, it all made sense if you stuck with it. I really recommend Watchmen. It was really well done. And also Mrs. Fletcher. You'd like Mrs. Fletcher. You should watch that.
The movie or I'd like
her? It's a TV show. You'd like her. Catherine Hahn.
Oh.
Did we talk about Catherine Hahn with you before?
No.
Catherine Hahn's a very attractive middle-aged actress, and she plays a woman, and her son goes off to college, and she's home alone, and she's an empty nester, and she's got no kids around.
My kind of lady.
She discovers she likes internet pornography.
My kind of lady.
She decides she might want to act out those things she sees in internet pornography in real life.
Oh, Lord.
How do you do that if you're a suburban single empty nester? You can see that all on Mrs. Fletcher on HBO. That just wrapped up. That was a good show.
Or call me at 1-810.
Believe me, this is a lady you would want to meet.
Yeah.
At the at a restaurant.
Yeah, I'm not filming me though. Yeah. I've seen me. There's a reason I close my eyes during sex. I don't want to see me.
Well, let's just without ruining Mrs. Fletcher.
Okay.
She finds out that she likes more than men.
Ah.
And that my son went off to college, and some of those high school friends didn't go to college, they're in my community college class.
Oh, yeah.
And you'll find out what happens. And she decides, hey, maybe it's got a real, it's kinky as all get out. Don't get me wrong. It's good show. But
this is a
Mrs.
TV
Fletcher,
show.
Mrs. Fletcher. It's on HBO.
Oh, okay.
It's on HBO. Just wrapped up, but it's very good.
Okay.
You know, we talk about gifts. I'm going to get you an HBO subscription.
Yeah?
Yeah, and that way you can come on the show and talk about what
and
you watched
And I'll
on
know
HBO.
Something. Yeah,
yeah,
okay.
I'll go, I watched Miss Fletcher last night, Joel. I beat off three times.
Oh, God.
To Mrs. Fletcher.
Yeah, that won't happen. twice, maybe. I was gonna
say, I tried being off to Mrs. Fletcher and I fell asleep. I woke up and Dolomite was on. What the fuck?
All right.
Also on Netflix is a television show that I'm a big fan of called Magic for Humans. Guy named Justin Willman is a magician, and he does stuff on the street. He does some stuff in the studio. Some of his magic joke tricks are bigger, and some of them are smaller. Some of them are done largely for comedy. In fact, most of his stuff, I would say, is done largely for comedy. But he's an excellent magician. There's been a few episodic magic shows in the last few years. I think this is the best one. I'm a magic fan. I'm an amateur magician. I'm a not-for-profit magician.
There you go.
I'm also a not-for-profit guitar player. Yeah. And
most of everything you do is not-for-profit.
Very few things I do for profit. I really love Magic for Humans. I told you to watch it. What'd you think?
You know what? I think that show is the reason why you review TV shows. So somebody on your show can tell people, don't waste your time.
Are you kidding me?
It was horrible.
You were not entertained by Magic for Humans.
It was horrible. I like magic.
You
like magic in person.
You've seen magicians.
I have been down on the pier in Key West and watched magicians.
Sure, street magicians.
Yeah, great doing little hand magic stuff, which is wonderful. Probably the most interesting thing about those guys are the female pickpockets working the crowd while they're doing the magic.
Fair enough.
And you get to see them at the bar after the show, which I caught on to after a while. But in any case, the show just started out terrible. The first thing he says is we don't use digital illusions or anything like that. And the camera pans back, and the fire he's standing from is on a TV set.
Yeah.
So it's a digital illusion.
Well, it's a joke. It's not a digital thing.
Yeah, and then he has a little lighter hidden inside of a marshmallow.
And he lights it, he puts a marshmallow against the TV, and the marshmallow and sets on fire. It's great.
What a trick.
Did you see the story about his mother at the end of that episode?
I can buy that
heartwarming
trick. I can do that as good as he did.
Come on.
It was horrible. It wasn't entertaining.
It wasn't entertaining.
And he actually accidentally bumps into Susan Sarandon walking down the street. Who would have thought?
Okay, but
this is not a
how
setup.
Many episodes?
Susan Sarandon.
How many episodes
did
you watch
of his
show?
So wide in the hips?
I don't know.
God, poor Susan.
She's older than you at this point.
She should stand sideways.
Right, without making fun of Susan Sarandon.
Yes.
How many episodes of Magic for Humans did you watch?
One half.
Okay, because he does a bit called, his show is called Magic for Humans, and one of his segments that he does on every show is Magic for Susans, where he finds a lady named Susan and he does magic trick for, and he'd been doing that all through season one, and now in season two, he actually got one celebrity named Susan to do it. And then
how clever.
It's cute.
That is clever.
He does it every show. He does
magic human
for
and Susan almost rhyme. I like that. That's very clever concept.
Yeah.
What great TV. Why the hell are you wasting your time?
If you're a fan of magic,
you could be practicing
guitar. If you're a fan of comedy, should watch Justin Willman on Magic for Humans.
You could spend your time becoming a professional instead of a not-for-profit guitar player. I could learn how to speak.
Well, if I was born with non-for-profit fingers, apparently.
You know what? They have a little plastic thing you can put on your guitar now, and you push one button, and it'll actually make the chord.
Yeah, but that's not
It actually
not
plays
all that.
Three chords.
Yeah, that's not versatile enough.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You are beyond three chords.
Well, you want to be able to play some scales, play some leads. You want to be able to do some picking. And
you can do leads over the top of that
thing. You can do leads over the top, but it's not. Yeah. I've seen those gimmicks. They're not for me.
Yeah.
I'm real, brother. I'm going to do it. No digital effects comedy, magic, or guitar playing. Thank
As
you very
the camera
much.
Pans back.
Once in a while, I edit something out
of the
show.
And I'm playing in the
show,
background for you.
Your hands are under mine as you're doing magic. You could do magic that way.
Oh, yeah. That'd be a lot of fun.
Magic for Humans is a great show. Ted didn't even give it the benefit of one episode.
I watched as long as I could stand watching it.
He's great.
He's not even entertaining.
What's not entertaining about him?
There's nothing good about the show.
It's whimsical. Dude, he's very pleasant. He's not trying to freak you out like Chris Angel or like he's got special magical
this
powers.
This is why
he's
people don't watch
he's
TV.
He's a funny guy who does magic
horrible.
For entertainment. It's
what
great.
A waste of film.
Oh, God.
It's terrible. It was horrible.
All right. We disagree.
How'd you like my review?
Yeah, it was a terrible review. He didn't even watch the show. Watch I half a show.
No, if you walk out on a movie, you can tell people why you walked out.
Yeah, but what if that movie gets good? You walked out of, okay, now I'm not defending this, but
I made it through Susan.
You and your date, didn't you and your date go to Once Upon a Time in Hollywood and walk out? Wasn't that you?
No.
Who was that?
No.
Oh, that was Bill Hildebrandt.
Yeah, it was not
I get
me.
All my old buddies all confused.
All old white men look the same.
You guys all look alike. All right.
Yeah.
Let's get into, all right, well, let's go to the movies then. Let's go to the movies. We both saw this movie, and again, Oscar contender. It's Oscar season, true life story. Bombshell. Story of Roger Ailes and Fox News. And what'd you think, Ted? I'll let you go first.
It was a great movie. I actually liked the movie.
Yeah.
Not only was it good acting, were the scenes good, was it authentic, but they had even the girl that was doing Megyn Kelly even spoke like Megyn Kelly with her accent and her... However she speaks, she sounded like Megyn Kelly. Everything was very believable. All the scenes I thought were great. It actually has an agenda. You know, it's kind of the Me Too movement, kind of, you know, the boss, you know, taking advantage of the girls thing. And so it had a message. And I think most every girl should go out and see this. I went with my daughter, who's very attractive. Young girl. And I think, well, because it's about men taking advantage of attractive women.
Sure.
It isn't fat, ugly women that are being asked into the boss's office.
Yeah.
And I've always said,
if
you're an attractive girl, you have some advantages. There's some people that are going to pay more attention to you. There's going to be doors open. People are interested in you where they won't be other people. But there's a price to pay. That the people are going to try and take advantage of you in ways that they won't other people. And I think it's good for young, attractive girls to be aware of that, that this is going to happen. And you got to know how to respond to it. So, you know, and they also had the, you know, anti-Fox agenda, which is fine with me. But, you know, if we asked Bill Burr, he'd say, well, where's the other movie? About the gold-digging horse, you know?
Yes.
About the people that are lined up to see LeBron James, not because he's good-looking, but because of who he is and what he has. So for what they were doing, I thought it was a great movie. I thought the actors were all great in their parts, and I think it should win some awards.
Well, Ted, you're an idiot who knows nothing about movies. I'm going to tell you that right now.
Okay.
I will also say that Bombshell's great. That doesn't change my opinion of you whatsoever. However, just because you got this one right doesn't mean you're... Okay. No, Bombshell's great. I'm kidding, of course. Bombshell was really good. In fact, you look at me like, you told me to go see it, you asshole. I did tell you to see it because it is good. Yeah, Bombshell's great. And I agree with you. Charlize Theron is as Megyn Kelly.
Yes.
It looked just like her. It sounded like her. It was great.
Yeah.
And even Nicole Kidman as Gretchen Carlson.
Yeah,
was very good. And
I didn't like her.
And, you know, even the guy, there's like one scene with a guy playing Bill O'Reilly.
Yeah.
And they gave him such a, like an accurate, like, makeup job.
Yes, yes.
That it was kind of creepy.
Yeah.
It felt like The Irishman. It was like a CGI.
You could identify everybody.
Yeah, just
even,
by
even
the actors.
The Hispanic lawyer lady, I can't remember what her name is.
But, Jeanine Pirro.
Yeah. But she looked like her. I mean, they'd walk on scene, into the scene.
And you knew exactly
I know who that
it was. Sean Hannity and all these guys. Yeah, they had actors play all these guys. I mean, John Lithgow was Roger Ailes.
Yeah.
Pretty good. The guy that played Richard Kind played Rudolph Giuliani.
Yeah.
And you could tell it was Rudolph Giuliani right away. It was cool.
And Geraldo looked like Geraldo.
Geraldo might have been a little ridiculous.
Yeah, but his mustache, you knew who he was.
Geraldo's ridiculous anyway in real life. Yeah.
Yes.
I enjoyed seeing all the way that Fox focuses on the women's appearance. And they show you that room with all the high heels in it and the ladies pulling their Spanx up and kind of that behind the scenes.
Well, it is a visual medium.
It is, and Roger Ailes says that.
Over and over.
But he says it in the creepiest way possible.
With the door locked.
A couple of things. You know, the Margot Robbie character and the lady from SNL, what's her name? They were fictional characters.
Yeah.
Because they, you know, and I guess without ruining the movie... I think they were fictional because...
I don't know how you ruined the movie. We all know what happened.
No, well, I think, you know, the accusation that it makes is that some of these women that did not go along with what Roger's saying were punished and moved to other time slots and demoted at the time.
I think that happens.
And others were moved ahead because they performed certain acts for Roger Ailes. And, you know, so I think for some of that, some of the names were changed to protect some people. And there was some fictionalization of a few characters. But like I said, all those characters that you know are in there. Yeah, Bombshell's really good. You guys should go see this. It's directed by a guy named Jay Roach, who directed Austin Powers, believe it or not.
Yeah, baby.
Yeah. And he's doing a more serious movie. And
they were showing it in the screening room.
Yeah.
And there couldn't have been more than 15 people in there.
Yeah, you know what? I don't think it was a real big hit.
Yeah.
But it's great. I think everyone should see it. I don't know. Why they're not. They're too busy at Star Wars.
Maybe it's just here.
But that is a
thing.
Maybe
it's the Midwest.
But that is a thing where when Star Wars comes out in Frozen 2 and Jumanji 2... there's less space in the theater for stuff like Bombshell and some of this other
stuff. How many twos do we need?
Too many.
Actually, that's going to be the name of my podcast. Too many. Boom, boom.
Segway. All right, well, let's talk about it. There's a couple more movies that were made out of real-life stories, and I think they're both excellent.
Right.
One is called Richard Jewell, about Richard Jewell, the man who was accused of being the Olympic Park bomber at the 96 Atlanta Olympics. Turns out Richard Jewell didn't bomb the Olympics.
Well, he was
an innocent man.
He went from a hero to a suspect.
He was a security guard in the Olympic Park.
And then back to, maybe we were wrong.
Yeah,
He was a good guy.
And what you see in this story is the way that the feds, the FBI, and they were in collusion with the media, the local Atlanta media, and some of the national media.
Are we talking about the election now, or are we talking about...
No, we're talking about the investigation into who bombed the Olympic Park.
Okay.
There was a rush to judgment. People thought that this guy, Richard Jewell...
Yeah.
And probably largely because he was a big, fat guy who lived with his mother in
working
his 30s.
Working security.
Had been a police officer, gotten fired, and this is all in the movie.
Right.
And, of course, it's a real story, so I haven't ruined anything, but... I thought this movie was great. Clint Eastwood directed it.
Right.
I think there is a controversy that the Atlanta Journal-Constitution reporter that, according to the movie, gave the information to the FBI. The FBI guy was played by John Hamm, who was a fictional.
Okay.
He was not a real FBI guy, but, was playing some character they created for this.
Right.
In the movie, she sleeps with John Hamm to get the information about who the suspect is. And then that story ends up the front page of the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. The thing is, this lady, the reporter, they used her real name. She's portrayed by Olivia Wilde, very attractive actress. You know who Olivia Wilde is?
No.
You look her up, she's very attractive. And she has passed away. She passed away a few years ago. So there is a controversy about this movie about was it wrong on the part of the producers and Clint Eastwood, the director, to say she slept with this FBI guy to get the information because she's dead. That's never been published anywhere. It was speculation on the part of the filmmakers. That could be a thing that I could see people getting upset about.
That's interesting.
Yeah. It's an interesting wrinkle because they're making a movie about an innocent man who was falsely accused, and then they're accusing this reporter of sleeping with the FBI guy for the information.
Is that something you can sue people about?
Well, she's dead, and I don't know. I think because you're dead, I don't think it matters.
It's weird. You can't play somebody's music because they have rights to it, but you can accuse somebody of...
Well, she's a public figure. Her name was on the front of the paper as the author.
Well, all the music I play is public music.
I guess.
It's on the radio.
All right.
What the hell?
Anyway.
And I'm not playing it any different than they are.
Well, you could make a movie about Jethro Tull, I guess, and they couldn't sue you.
Isn't that weird? Can I play Jethro Tull's music in the movie?
No, you got to pay Jethro Tull.
Oh.
Here's the point, though.
Yeah.
Very good movie, Richard Jewell. Again, talking about Nobody Going, I've heard this is like the lowest grossing Clint Eastwood movie of all time. And again, I don't know, maybe people don't want to see a story of a big fat guy who was innocent of being accused of being a terrorist.
Why is Clint Eastwood even working
at
this point?
He likes to work. He's 80 something years old and he likes to work. So.
He was like mayor of Carmel last I knew.
Okay.
Lived out there, Pebble Beach.
Yeah, and he wasn't making movies at that point, but he was done with that gig and he started making movies again. And
I don't know what
he's
else
made
to
do. Some good ones, and this one's a good one. So everyone should see this.
Yeah.
Again, I think this actor, I didn't look up the guy's name. You can look it up. The actor that plays Richard Jewell, not only does he look like the guy, this guy was a guy, and I've talked to some comedians that he was born in Saginaw, born and raised in Saginaw, Michigan. He used to do open mics on our scene.
What's his name?
I forget his name. You can look it up. The guy who played Richard Jewell in the movie. He was an open mic comedian.
Wow.
At one point.
Wow.
I don't know that I ever met him. I don't recall this guy. I mean, you meet so many chubby white guys doing comedy.
I wonder if he knows Mike Ball. You know, Mike ran a lot of those open mics up.
He probably hadn't done stand-up in 10 years, but because he went out to L.A., and he's been in a bunch of movies now.
Yeah.
But, yeah, he's and he's really good. He does a great job playing Richard.
You know, Cooley. A lot really of comedians good. End up being really good actors.
Yeah.
It's yeah. interesting.
He's good. The other thing I saw that's based on a true story is called, actually some more than these, but another good one that I'm recommending. Maybe some of these movies I'm not going to recommend. Ford versus Ferrari. Excellent. Great job. Christian Bale's came out around Thanksgiving. It's going to be even hard to find in the theater nowadays, but I did see that over the break here, and really good. Matt
Damon.
What
was the story?
Matt Damon plays Carroll Shelby.
Yeah.
Who was a race car driver and developed sports cars.
Oh, I saw this.
Yeah, and the Ford Motor Company decides they want to get into auto racing.
Right.
And they want to beat Ferrari at the 24 Hours of Le Mans. It's an endurance race.
And he doesn't, and he doesn't, and he doesn't. Well, yeah, he struggles.
Yeah, so yeah, they have struggles. To. Ferrari is the number one racing company in the world. Ford, the backstory is that Ford wanted to buy Ferrari. Ferrari was struggling financially.
Right.
So all the Ford executives, including Lee Iacocca, who's played in this movie by John Bernthal, who
right.
you remember from Walking Dead, they fly out to Italy, have this meeting with Ferrari. They agree to a price. All of a sudden,
they get ghosted.
Yeah. Ferrari yeah. backs out. Fiat yeah. ends up buying Ferrari.
Yeah.
The idea was that Ferrari was using Ford to bump the price up.
Right, exactly.
So anyway, Ford's pissed, and Henry Ford II is pissed. He's the guy running Ford in the early 60s, and he's pissed off, and he says, we're going to beat them at racing. And he has to develop this car that can do the 24-hour Le Mans, which is, ends up being the Ford GT.
Right.
If you know anything about, they still make a Ford GT that's
right.
based on this car, and it's awesome. Carroll Shelby is played by Matt Damon. Ken, racing car guys are going to hate me. Ken, I forget Ken's last name. Christian Bale plays the guy who's the driver.
Right.
Who helps develop this car. Who has to actually run the...
Yeah, I saw this. It
really,
was really good.
Really well. You saw the movie? Or you saw the trailer? Yeah,
no,
it's great,
I saw
right?
the movie. Yeah.
Yeah, fantastic.
Yeah.
You're looking at me like you didn't see the movie.
No, I saw
movie.
It. I saw it.
The more I talked about it, the more you got into it.
Well, I'm old. It takes me a while to remember things. But no,
it's a great movie.
Yeah, it's a great movie.
Really well done.
It shows
great
how Shelby
scenes.
Is just obsessed with beating Ferrari.
Yeah.
He's just got a personal vendetta. And, yeah, it's very good.
And really, really good racing scenes.
Yeah.
Terrific racing scenes.
Yeah.
You know, acting's really good. You know, and it's a really class. Good guys and bad guys.
Yeah.
You know who the good guys are. You know who the bad guys are. You root for the good guys to win. You know, it's a great movie.
And it gives you some insight into that automobile industry.
Yeah.
Well, I like
that. We live in Detroit, man. We know a lot of this stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I saw the DeLorean documentary recently, and that was interesting,
too. Yeah, I talked about that on the show. I don't know if you
were here, but it gives you insight.
Yeah.
How it was built.
Framing
how was
John
designed.
DeLorean. That's on Hulu right now.
Yeah, yeah. I watched that. That was pretty good.
All right, so those, I'm recommending all of those. I'm also going to recommend a couple documentaries here. Oh, Jojo Rabbit is going to be probably nominated for Best Picture. I'm recommending that for sure. Taika Waititi, one of the great directors, living directors.
Where can you see that?
You have to go to the theater and see Jojo Rabbit now. It is a black comedy about a young boy living in Nazi Germany.
Why are some comedies called black comedies, Joel?
Because it's a comedy about a dark subject, which is World War II and the Holocaust and the treatment of Jews in Nazi Germany. But it's done as a black comedy. And now you might go, that probably doesn't work. And boy, they've made Nazi comedies. If you look up Jerry Lewis's, The Day the Clown Cried, it's an infamous.
Well, they got a scene with Hitler growing his mustache out and curling it, and that makes it funny. Like,
but
it's a new look.
This movie, this little boy, well, Hitler's his imaginary friend.
Oh.
This little 10-year-old boy. And Hitler's his imaginary friend. And I don't want to ruin anything in this because it's really done so well. Very reminiscent of like a Wes Anderson type directorial touches to this. But Taika Waititi's made some really good movies, including Hunt for the Wilder People, Eagle versus Shark, which all great movies. He's from New Zealand.
Oh.
And he worked on the television show Flight of the Conchords.
Oh.
And he's buddies with those guys.
Oh.
And What We Do in the Shadows.
Oh, okay. Are they still performing Flight of the Conchords?
I think a little bit. Yeah, I like those guys.
Yeah,
those guys
too.
Are good, yeah.
Yeah, they had a good
but
show
Taika
for a while.
But Taika was their guy that collaborated with them on that show and a bunch of other stuff. And it's a great movie. I'm really recommending it. Some great actors in this. And
I'm sure I'll be talking about. I'm going to do my best movies of the year. I'm sure Jojo Rabbit's going to be on that list. It's definitely worth a look. Not really based on a true story. I mean, World War II was real.
Did
but
that happen?
Jojo Rabbit did not.
I never
really
saw
happen.
It, but I heard it happened.
A 10-year-old boy did not have Hitler as an imaginary friend. Maybe he did.
Yeah.
But that's not the story. All right. Also, a couple quick documentaries. The Quiet One is on Hulu. Very good story of Bill Wyman, the Rolling Stones bassist.
Yeah.
The Quiet One. It's good. You should check that out. If you have Hulu.
Yeah, I've seen that show.
Okay, that's good. Yeah,
yeah, it is good.
It is good.
It is good. I've seen more than you think.
All right. What about, there's a documentary called Apollo. That's on HBO.
Yeah, I have not seen that.
It's about the Apollo Theater.
Oh, now that'd be good.
Yeah, it was good. I think it was a little heavy-handed with, you know, it's a lot of it's about race. Because it's the Apollo, it's in Harlem, New York.
Yeah.
I thought the stuff where it was really heavy on race and police shootings and that was not as good as the entertainment side of the Apollo. Because the movie is probably 70-30 entertainment to politics.
Yeah, but I think there's still a lot of politics in that. Right.
It's on HBO. I recommend it. I didn't think it was one of the best documentaries of the year or anything. But the Apollo is an interesting story. I didn't realize the Apollo actually closed twice in its history.
Really?
They went bankrupt twice. And it is actually being run now. It is actually funded by the state of New York.
That's in Harlem now,
it is
right?
A not-for-profit.
Ah.
There you go.
Not-for-profit theater.
I guess according to, I think the original owner of the Apollo, he's interviewed, and he says, you know, as entertainment acts got bigger, the Apollo only has 1,600 seats. And so it's very hard to attract people to that venue for 1,600 seats and be able to pay them the going rate. And so now the Apollo is funded by the state. They don't have to make money on the shows anymore, but yet it can stay in the neighborhood. So it's a really nice story.
That neighborhood is really upscale nowadays.
Well, it's, you know, New York's had its ups and downs. I mean, you see race riots right outside the Apollo Theater.
Right now?
No, but you see in its history, you see it in the film.
When my daughter was shopping for a place to buy in Manhattan, we went up to that neighborhood and things were pretty damn pricey.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah, gentrification.
It's kind of like the artsy people move in.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
And after that, the hip people move in, and then all of a sudden the prices go up.
The Apollo is, it's a good documentary. I've never myself been to the Apollo. I think it's something I'd like to do.
Oh, me too. I think that'd be fun.
Yeah, but I've not had
road trip, dude. I'll get out the RV. We'll go.
That's on HBO. That's good. Documentary called Maiden. Very good. About the first women's, this might be Oscar nominated. I don't know. The first women sailing team that did this race around the world sailing team. It's really cool. Look that up. Maiden.
There's a race around the world?
Yeah, it's a yachting race around the world. It takes about 9 months.
Are you sure?
Yeah, it goes in different legs.
What's the name of the race?
Oh, you'd have to look it up. I watched this movie a few weeks ago.
I've done a little racing, and I've done a little sailing, I don't know. I'll have to look it up.
And in the early 90s,
you don't have to look it up now.
There was an all-female team that raced around the world. And you'll hear their story, and they have footage from the race.
I wonder how they do
that. And it's very cool. It's a cool documentary. It's called Maiden.
Yeah.
Because I think the boat was the Maiden.
Yeah, interesting.
And it was their maiden voyage. But it was
a buddy of mine I sailed with actually sailed across the Atlantic.
That's a hard job.
Yeah.
Sailing.
Well, it is.
And you see that.
Especially out in the shipping lanes.
And you see how dangerous it is.
At night.
Yeah.
No lights in the shipping lanes at night, because you got to go with the way the water flows.
I think one of the legs was Cape Town, South Africa. You went from Cape Horn to Cape, but you went around Antarctica. It's crazy. Yeah, you'll see it in the movie.
Around Antarctica?
You go near Antarctica.
Yeah, but you're going around the tip of the Africa, African continent.
But you have to sail through the southern Atlantic Ocean, which is Antarctica.
Yeah, you don't want to do that.
Yeah, well,
that's
see
where you don't want to go.
It's crazy. So
yeah.
Maiden was really good. I saw so much stuff. I'm not recommending It's a Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood, the Tom Hanks Mr. Rogers movie. I talked about it a little bit at the end of the Star Wars show.
Great music, though.
Did you see it? Yeah. Great. He was a good piano player.
That's nice.
Mr. Rogers.
Yeah.
And here's the problem with that movie. I already talked about it a little bit at the end of the Star Wars review because Kevin Kramus had seen it. Not enough Mr. Rogers. You know,
really?
The story is this guy writes an article about Mr. Rogers, and the movie's all about this writer guy who's not even the real writer. They fictionalized the writer. And he's got a dad that he doesn't get along with, and he's divorced and all this stuff. And it's like,
I think I'd rather watch the Pee Wee Herman story.
Yeah,
if you're going to do a kid's show, Pee Wee's a little bit more interesting than Mr. Rogers.
They did a great documentary about Mr. Rogers a few years
ago. I wonder if
he
had groupies.
Well, he was very religious.
Well, it doesn't matter. There can still be girls waiting outside. I'm not saying he's doing anything. I wonder if there's people that are like trying to get with Mr. Rogers.
The documentary is called "Won't You Be My Neighbor." It came out a couple years ago.
That'd be
a great
theme for him.
Well, the thing about it is that these reporters would interview Mr. Rogers, and Tom Snyder, you know, famously, had him on a show and was like, "Are you on the level?" Like, everyone thought it was an act.
Yeah,
and it wasn't an act. He was really this genuine, nice, caring person.
Soft guy. Though.
Soft, yeah, caring guy. He was a minister.
Yeah. I came from commercial construction.
Yeah.
People I dealt with are assholes.
Yeah.
And they had to be.
Yeah.
And so that's kind of what I'm used to. Like, you get too soft, and I think, where did you grow up? How did you grow up to be this soft?
I'm an asshole. You're an asshole.
Well, you grew up in a neighborhood someplace where you got beat up or you had to beat somebody up. You can't be Mr. Rogers.
The Judy Garland biopic called Judy with Renee Zellweger as Judy Garland.
Oh.
How's that sound, Ted?
Hate it, hate it. Hate Judy. Hate Renee.
Hey, Renee, hate Judy.
I do. Yeah, she's terrible.
It was okay.
Perfect to play the part.
I didn't love it.
I could hate her immediately.
I didn't love it. I think they're probably going to nominate Renee Zellweger for the Oscars. And again, people know this is the show, I see everything that's Oscar nominated. So I did watch Judy.
Yeah.
And it's just sad. I mean, she did a good job playing Judy Garland.
Yeah.
But it is sad.
Yeah, but who cares? People in the industry care. Nobody else cares.
Kind of agree with you on that. And then we bring to what might be the hottest tipped movie to get a Best Picture nomination of the year.
Drum roll.
It's called Marriage Story. It's on Netflix. It stars Adam Driver and Scarlett Johansson. Ted Moss, I know you've seen it as a man who's been married and divorced twice. Give us your review of Marriage Story on Netflix, Ted.
It's got to be the worst movie that's ever been suggested that Mike get it out. It's not only is the acting bad, the scening's bad, the sets are bad, how they taped it is bad. It's unbelievable.
Oh,
it's nowhere near the truth. From the minute I started watching, I thought, this is what kind of junior in college put this shit together?
It's named Noah Baumbach.
Horrible.
A very well-known independent film director.
Well, I don't care what the names are associated with it.
Yeah.
But even if you go to when they first meet the lawyers, the lawyers want to know, how'd you meet? That's bullshit. Lawyers are hired guns. They just
wasn't it their therapist?
It was her lawyers.
Therapist?
No, how'd you get
right,
together? Hang on. Let me finish. Not only was that unrealistic, but when they went into court to argue the cases, the two lawyers just went at each other.
Yeah.
No judge would allow that. And they never showed the judge. I thought, did they even hire a judge? It went on for five minutes. Them talking about it was so terrible and unrealistic.
To its credit.
It was horrible. The only true thing in the whole story was that men get screwed over in divorces, and women have a tendency to blame men that they aren't happy, and that they are somehow responsible for their happiness. That happens. I'm not saying it's right.
Okay.
But other than that, it was all bullshit.
All right. Wow. That was quite a review.
So I wasn't a fan.
You're not a fan of anything I tell you to see. You like Bombshell. Okay, here's the point.
Yeah.
I did not love Marriage Story. I get why people like it, but
Kramer versus Kramer.
Yeah,
go
Kramer
watch
versus
that.
Kramer's a better movie.
Much better.
Absolutely.
Much better.
I agree. Author.
Yeah.
Better movie. Here's the thing. Adam Driver is a very good actor.
He was.
And I thought Adam Driver was great in this.
Yes.
Scarlett Johansson.
Sucked.
And she's in Jojo Rabbit, too. Scarlett doesn't do a whole lot for me.
She sucked.
She's not a great actress, in my opinion.
Not in this.
She was okay. I do think it's also going to be hard for an audience in the Midwest of quote-unquote regular people to relate to the actress and theater director living on separate coasts and fighting over custody of a child. That, I think, is what's going to make this movie in a lot of ways hard for people to relate to. You know, she's on a TV show. He's a Broadway director. Who the fuck can relate to those people?
My daughter went to UCLA to get her master's, and her husband lived in New York City at the time. So I get that.
Yeah.
And that's interesting. It was an interesting
dynamic.
She was not compelling. When she was interacting with her son, it looked forced.
Okay.
She was not natural.
Right.
She was not comfortable. There was nothing convincing about this movie.
It's probably not a great movie about divorce when the most interesting people are the lawyers.
And I think that the three lawyers, the three big lawyers in this movie, Laura Dern is representing Scarlett Johansson.
God, she looked terrible.
Character. Okay, fair enough. But she's a very good actress, Laura Dern, and she was great in this.
And then
Adam Driver tries to hire Ray Liotta.
Yeah, that's
who
funny.
Is just
that's
incredible.
Funny.
Ray Liotta.
That was funny. Yeah.
He's got all this big mop of gray hair on top of his head.
Yeah.
He's hardly, he's almost unrecognizable from Goodfellas. And he's all bloated, and he's wearing these real sharp suits and a pinky ring.
Yeah, but he's always
and
that
he's
character.
Like a bulldog. He was great. Yeah. And then Alan Alda comes in while he's trying to represent.
Like, why are you talking to me? Yeah.
And Alan Alda's, you know, just one of the all-time greats.
Yeah.
And Alan Alda is fantastic in this movie.
Yeah, for 2 minutes.
Those three lawyers, give me a movie or a TV show about those guys. I'm watching that.
Yeah.
I was not that interested in the story of this kid and everything. And the kid was a good actor, let's be honest. I mean, the kid was pretty good.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think a lot of people are going to be bored. You know, something happens with these movies, Ted, where, you know, the critics see these things early. And there's a lot of hype about this is going to be the Oscar movie.
Yeah.
The critics are so quick to, you know, they said this about The Irishman. No, this is going to be the big, you know, movie of all time. And, oh, this is the best movie of the year. And we got to give it all these awards. And then the general public gets to see it on Netflix. And they're like, what the fuck are you talking about?
Yeah.
And I don't know that the public's wrong. I think that Marriage Story has not, you know, with the general audiences has kind of been... Kind of like people shrugging their shoulders.
Well, you have good actors.
Like you.
You got good actors in the movie.
And The Irishman, same deal. Too long, not as good as your older stuff, Scorsese.
Yeah.
You know, everyone's watching this on Netflix, and everyone's bummed out.
Yeah.
And there's great movies at the theater, like Richard Jewell and Bombshell and Ford versus Ferrari.
Right.
People aren't really going to them, and I think that's too bad.
I don't think the quality of the movies is what it used to be.
Maybe it's not.
I mean, I watched a special not too long ago on the making of Gone with the Wind.
Okay.
And what they went through
to
good acting out of the actors and actresses was amazing.
Yeah.
How many takes, how many things.
Right.
But you know what? I mean, when you have a movie where the actor, actress is not even compelling or realistic.
Yeah.
When you look at him, you go, you're acting. I can see you're acting. Why am I even thinking that you're acting? It's not, this story's not carrying me away. And whoever wrote that doesn't know shit about getting divorced.
Yeah, I don't know if
twice.
Noah Baumbach's been divorced or married.
It's not true.
I don't know.
It doesn't go down that way.
Well,
they're about, lawyers are about not being emotionally involved. They're hired guns to fight for you as much as they can.
Yeah.
And they do push it, and they made that point.
Mm-hmm.
But they don't care about all this touchy-feely stuff. They got 20 cases they're handling it right now. They don't give a shit.
Well,
you know, I called up my lawyer one time about something my first wife was doing during the divorce.
Yeah.
And he said, is that unlike her? And I said, no, that's kind of pretty much how she is. He said, then why are you calling me? You know, and he's back in the day, he was charging me $250 an hour or whatever. I thought, I should. And I'm on the clock.
There's some number thrown around in this movie, too. I forget what it was.
Yeah, it was like $800 an hour or something.
Big L.A. hotshot attorneys.
Yeah, call him, not me, or whatever. Yeah,
I thought those guys did a great job. That is the thing about Marriage Story that I will say is Alan Alda, Ray Liotta, Laura Dern were all fantastic, and Adam Driver's good. And of course, Adam Driver spit on me in New York City.
Congratulations on that. I hope you have not watched.
I have not watched. That was the highlight. I mean,
where did it land?
He was doing. I think it landed on my arm.
Really? Which arm?
I think it was this hand. It was this right hand here.
May I shake that hand?
He was doing his show, Burn This, on Broadway. That was the second row. And he was, you know, Adam Driver rants and raves.
Yeah.
And spit was flying everywhere, and it went on me.
I think that's great.
Yeah, that's a cool story.
You know, if that was Laura Dern, Anthony Salando would be in kissing your hand.
And Carrie Russell was in Burn This, the girl from Felicity.
Oh.
And she's also in Star Wars.
Oh.
There you go. So
well,
I saw two Star Wars actors on Broadway.
How many really highly paid good actors and actresses are there at any given time in Hollywood?
Yeah.
Is it over 200?
I don't know. Well, the thing is, when you're hot, you're going to get that call for every movie. So Scarlett Johansson can probably pick what she wants to do.
Sure.
She probably could have been in Bombshell.
Sure.
She probably could have been in, you know, you name a movie. And then when you're not picked, when nobody wants you,
You got to prove yourself.
Yeah, but
you know?
Other okay, if it's not her, are there more than 50 actresses
you know,
that would be called for that part? I think it's a very small community.
I think it is too.
And I think people come and go. You're yeah. in, you're out.
Well, I think when these things don't hit, I think you're out.
Yeah.
Where's Chris O'Donnell?
Exactly.
You don't see Chris O'Donnell anymore, but you have your Ryan Gosling.
Yeah.
And, you know, and you got your Matt Damon hanging around. And Matt Damon's getting old. You see Ford versus Ferrari, he's getting old.
Yeah. Isn't that that's weird, huh?
And it's kind of like he's kind of a fat old Southern guy who has heart trouble.
Yeah.
And that's the character he's playing, and that's what he did.
Yeah, well, at some point, you got to give it up. I think Eddie Murphy's getting old, too.
Yeah, that's Dolomite. Rudy Ray Moore was a fat old guy.
There you
and
go.
And that's, I think he was
perfect
good for
part,
that.
Yeah.
So anyway, there's a lot of movies, I know, folks, but it is Oscar season. I'm going to try to see. The Oscar noms will be out probably before I do the next show, so then I'll know exactly what I got to see. But I have lists. I mean, it's unbelievable. I go through hell on Oscar season. I talk about watching these movies, and granted, I saw a lot of good stuff.
Don't you think it's all political? It doesn't.
They
decide which movies they want to make successful.
That's why you get Marriage Story. Look, Netflix is the most powerful entertainment company on the planet, maybe save for Disney, but certainly when it comes to streaming video, and they've got budgets and directors, and they can do press, and they can screen these movies and give these guys lobster dinners. You want to see Marriage Story 2 months early and have a lobster dinner and sit with Adam Driver and have him spit all over you?
Yeah.
Yeah, and then you're going to write a great article about it, and then everyone's going to get hyped up, and then people are going to watch it and go, what the fuck are you talking about?
How many studios are there anymore that are making these big
major studios, probably four. I mean, Disney just bought Fox.
Yeah, I saw that.
Yeah.
So, okay, there's three or four studios. And so, are they in cahoots with each other?
I mean, they're generally not, but what happens sometimes is these movies get so expensive that they'll sometimes, one studio release the picture overseas, one studio release a picture domestically.
But I mean, would one studio call up another and say, we're going to push for best picture, and they'll say, okay, we won't fight you on that, we're going to push for best actor and actress
let's say
to promote our film?
I don't know who made these things, but let's say Bombshell, they're pushing Bombshell for best picture,
right?
And you made a movie at that studio as well. They're going to pick the one that they want to push.
No.
I think that's the thing that you're saying. I think, but like, if there were two movies by Sony Pictures they thought were Oscar worthy, they're probably only going to push one. And if you're the second one, you're not going to get that much attention.
Look, in commercial construction, when you bid jobs and you're a distributor, you're going to provide, say, the lighting package for a hospital.
Okay.
And you could call up another distributor and say, by the way, don't bid this project on the hospital that low. Hang on. Yeah, so it'll be profitable. I tell you what, I will not bid the project over there on the office building low either. That way you can make more profit on that. I'm wondering, you know, you can't do that because that's illegal. But within the entertainment industry, and you're only talking about Oscars.
Yeah.
So you're talking about an entertainment award.
Yeah.
Could you call up the other studio and say, don't push your movie for this? You know, put something in there, but don't heavily promote it.
I don't know that they collude, but the way that they release them, the time when they release them, they definitely space them out to, you know, if they have something, that's the thing about movies that
strategic,
a lot of people don't understand, is that if your movie's really good and they think it's going to win an Oscar, they're not going to put it out in June.
Right.
They're not going to put it out in April.
People will forget.
They're going to put it out in September, October, November, December to try to get that Oscar buzz. So that's why in January and February, the movies generally suck. Because they know that these movies are going to be forgotten about, and so they're putting out the teen comedies,
the summertime,
the horror movies, and the bad shit.
The drive-in theater movies.
Yeah, and summer is going to have the blockbusters. Now, look, Marvel and Disney have, you know, they have been able to say, we're going to release the Avengers in April. We don't give a fuck.
Yeah.
Because that movie is going to do great at any time of the year.
Well, they have a special clientele.
But so there is stuff like that, and there is stuff with, you know, this actress we want to win.
Yeah, but I'm just wondering with the awards.
The awards are very political.
Goes. Yeah.
Very political.
Yeah. Yeah. Who you whining, who you dining. You know, what's it worth to you?
Yeah.
Because you're going to get money back if you have the best picture.
Yeah.
So what's it worth to you if we vote you in? And I'm not saying you can go to the people judging, but I'm saying you can go to the other studios.
Yeah.
And I don't think it's illegal.
I don't know that they collude studio.
Why not?
Because they all want to win.
What if I could guarantee you you're going to get best actor, best actress, but you're not going to get best picture? Would you settle for that?
I could help you
do that if you'll help me do this.
The way that the voting takes place is that amongst the Academy,
You are nominated by people in your own category, meaning actors nominate actors. Directors nominate directors.
Right.
You know, sound guys nominate sound guys. When it comes to voting, once the nominees are done, then that is open to everybody in Hollywood, if that makes sense.
To the Actors Guild? I mean, what?
Well, the Actors Guild have their own awards. They have Screen Actors Guild awards.
So everybody in Hollywood, what? Everybody living there?
No, no, no. I'm saying the entire Academy. So let's say I'm a sound editor.
Okay, right.
I get to nominate the sound editor nominees. Once that list of nominees comes out,
right,
then everybody can vote for the sound editors. And the sound editor can vote for the actors
and the
pictures
and
everything.
I understand.
Yeah, that's how that works.
Yeah.
That's how it works. So it is sort of like... The nomination is an honor you get from your peers.
Yeah.
The actual Oscar award itself is an award that is given to you by all of the Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
Yeah, and the people who people who write that on the card and store that on the card
yes.
are not interested in going on vacation to Hawaii.
They're an accounting firm.
Yeah,
They screwed up a few years ago. When they read La La Land and those guys got fired.
I know.
Those guys got fired. They don't do it anymore. They have a different accounting firm now. So you got to mind your P's and Q's there. But the other thing is, you know, the Golden Globes. You've heard of the Golden Globes.
Yeah, sure.
That's the Hollywood Foreign Press Association. So that is writers from outside the United States. So the Golden Globes, they say, is the phoniest one of all.
Yeah.
Because those people get free meals
and
trips to shit, you know, because it's not even like the Academy. It's just not even monitored that well. It's journalists.
Right.
Complete sellouts.
Right.
You know?
Sure.
Complete a-holes.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's just a big way to promote movies. I mean,
well, look,
we have an award show about giving awards to ourselves.
Okay. Look,
so you'll go out and watch more movies.
Well, as a film major, I like seeing good movies. So I like to read the reviews, see what's Oscar nominated, and be able to talk about it on the show. And that's why I see all the Oscar. But the reason I see all the Oscar nominated movies in certain categories, I think I do like 5 or 6 categories, is that I know that there is a level of bullshit.
Yeah.
And when I see all of them, because the thing is, you know, they nominate, you know, 5 actresses and 10 pictures and, you know, so, you know, 20 acting awards. Nobody sees some of those movies.
Yeah.
And you go, how did this person get nominated? And I watch it and I go, you see that it is bullshit. You see that Marriage Story is overrated.
Right.
You see that, you know, in the past, some of the movies that won, Moonlight. Who gives a fuck about Moonlight?
Yeah.
Terrible movie.
Yeah.
Won the best picture. Why? Hey, everyone thought it was nice. It was about a gay black guy.
Yeah.
Everyone thought we're going to be political. We're going to let the gay black movie win versus, you know, La La Land, which was great.
I like Moonstruck.
La La Land, the whitest fucking shit you'll ever see. Oh, no, that's too fucking white for us. We got to vote for Moonlight, which was nowhere near as good.
Right. Okay, last 5 years.
Yes.
What was the best movie you saw from an entertainment standpoint?
Yeah, from an entertainment standpoint.
You went to the movie, got carried away, and thought, I just enjoyed the experience of being at this show.
You know, I have all my lists of the past years. La La Land, I still think is great. I think that still holds up. I thought that was a fantastic movie.
That's kind of a throwback. That
yeah, it was
the
a musical,
40 musicals,
you know, Ryan Gosling,
and dancing.
Emma Stone.
Yeah, 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 and a good plot behind it. And
Really liked. Oh God, what else was great? Gone Girl was fantastic. David Fincher's movie.
I've not watched that.
Gone Girl was absolutely terrific. It stuck with me.
Yeah.
I haven't seen that in years, but boy, that was good. What else did I really? There was a movie called Whiplash. Same guy who made La La Land, about a drummer in a college band. It was a really, really good movie. There was a movie called Philomena, which no one saw. That was great.
Philomena.
Yeah, it was about
a foreign film.
Yeah, it was from England.
Okay.
Yeah, but it was about a woman who this journalist was looking into. Basically, the woman was a nun, and she had a child. And it was a controversy. He had to investigate it years later. It was a really cool movie. Ah, God, you know, it's so hard because I see these things and I love them.
Well, you know, I think people ask me about comedy, and I have to say, you know, it's kind of like music. It depends on what mood I'm in. I mean, sometimes I want to listen to jazz, other times Motown, other times rock. You know, I even like some rap, but it all depends on the time. So it's hard to say the best.
I'm just randomly pulling up movies that I saw. A movie called Green Room was great a few years ago. I'm looking at a list from that year, 2016. Fantastic Green Room. You can stream that. That's a thriller.
Right.
But, I have Taika Waititi's movie Hunt for the Wilder People on here. That was a cool movie.
Well, see, I've gotten to the place with stand-up comedy where I'm hoping that there's an edge to them, that there's something. You're making a statement that's a little bit edgy.
Yeah.
That is a little bit not politically correct mm-hmm. somehow. You're making a statement of about something that's real underneath the comedy. I mean, I want to laugh.
Right.
But I like when Bill Burr did his, you know, about the, you know, the horse. What do you call him? The what do you call him? The gold digging horse.
Ah,
you know, and I think he's making a statement yes. about that this really does exist, and there's a reason for it. So I like it when there's more to it than just superficial laughs. And I think movies are the same way.
My best movie of 2017 was a movie very few people saw. This, The Florida Project.
Was that about the selling
Amazon.
Of Florida?
About it was about it
swamp
was about
lands
it was
or
about poor people. In Orlando, Florida.
Really?
Living in a hotel.
It's called the what? What's
the Florida Project.
The Florida Project.
And Willem Dafoe is the guy that is the, like, the hotel manager.
Oh, God.
And it's about this family, a single mother and her kids, and they're living in this. And really? Is it depressing? Sure. But it's great. Florida yeah. Project is beautiful.
Yeah.
I cried. You know, look at my list in 2017. Dunkirk, great yeah. movie.
Rabbit Proof Fence, I thought was pretty good.
I never saw that, but I heard that was good. The yeah. Shape of Water, which ended up winning the Oscar that year.
I thought
very
that was good,
good.
Too. That's kind of,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah, I have The Disaster Artist on this list. I got to, you know.
Yeah, interesting. Yeah.
I'm just, you asked what were the best movies. I make these lists every year for the show, and so I, you know.
Well, you know what? As I get older, I have an appreciation for things that I didn't used to appreciate, like when I saw the making of Gone with the Wind. I thought, you know, it's almost like I could tell my kids, once upon a time, there was a place, and this really existed, mm-hmm. where people lived like this and thought like this and yeah. believed this. And in almost a heartbeat, it was like gone.
Yeah.
It was all gone. And I really never got that when I yeah. first watched it. But to think that that whole culture died and the effect on the people in the South. And it's mm-hmm. interesting that the Southern people like that movie so much.
Yeah.
It's like, this was our culture, and we're sad that it's gone. Mm-hmm. And I never really picked up on that until, you know, recently. And I yeah. thought, I like that underlying statement. I mean, there's a lot of other things going on.
Yeah,
and it's
yeah,
beautifully
yeah.
acted. But I kind of like it when there's a message.
Did you see Vice, the movie about Dick Cheney?
Yes.
It's great.
Yes.
Great movie.
Yes.
And that Bombshell reminds me of that a little bit.
Yeah.
And the way it was done.
Yeah.
But I'm just looking at some of these movies. First Man about Neil Armstrong from last
right.
year. Great. A lot of good stuff.
Yeah.
A lot of good stuff. Anyway, let's get out of here. Ted Moss.
Yes.
We're going to be listening for you soon on the podcast airwaves or your.
It's going to be
coming to a phone near you. Ted
Moss. Talks Too Much.
That's the name of the show.
That's the name of the podcast. Ted Talks Too Much.
Ted Talks More Than Joel. How yeah. about that for a time?
I don't know. We're going to have to time out. Maybe faster, but not more.
Ted Talks More Than Joel. but thank you, Ted, for coming out. Again, the Advanced Comedy Class, January 11th. That's a week from Saturday as we're recording this. Come out to that. Sign up. Call the Comedy Castle at 248-542-9900. It's really a great class. I enjoyed doing
actually,
it.
Actually, more
helps
than you ever want to know about. Yeah, if you want to do
yeah.
comedy, you're going to learn an awful lot.
I mean, I talk a lot about comedy here, and I do that live in the class. You get to ask questions. It's great. We go over your act.
Where else
you pointers.
Can you go to ask questions of a stand-up comedian? Because usually comedians won't. No, they won't tell you.
That's true. I mean, you know,
any question you want.
You know, I never took a class, but I learned so much going on the road with guys and driving and sitting in the back of the club
yeah.
and sitting in the car and talking about the business and asking questions and all that stuff. I've kind of boiled down to 6 weeks.
That takes years,
class.
Though.
Yeah.
I mean, I've performed
been doing it 20 years.
Yeah, with Sal D'Amelio. Gave yeah. me some tips when I was at One Night Stands with him.
Yeah.
I mean, I appreciate all that.
Yeah.
There's been a lot of good comics.
Sal's a guy
me.
That I started with. A very good comic and knows it all.
And a great guy. Yeah.
Great guy, knows it all.
Yep.
I think I fit those qualifications.
Yeah.
I'm a great guy who knows it all.
I don't know you're all that great, but you're accommodating.
How much do I know?
Yeah, I don't know.
Okay. I got you on. You got me on none of the two. I failed on both. All right, Ted, let's get out of here.
All right.
Ted Moss, thank you so much. Good luck with the dates, buddy. I mean, come on.
Yeah.
We need you to get lucky out there.
I hope to get ghosted again this week.
I think being a podcaster, that's going to shoot you right up the list.
Yeah.
If people don't want to fuck, if they don't want to fuck a podcast,
I
don't know what they want to fuck.
A lot of groupies out there
yeah,
for
the podcasting community. A lot of girls who want to move up.
Yeah.
A lot of girls. You can be the Roger Ailes of podcasting.
Can I get on
You have
air.
It in you.
Yeah. Got to give head to get head.
Look, that's right. You gotta come hike your skirt up in my podcast
yeah,
studio, honey.
Yeah.
It'll be great. Those are all jokes about Bombshell.
Yeah.
Don't get mad at us. We didn't do that. Thank you, Ted. Thank you, everybody, for listening. Happy 2020. We'll be back with you for another year of Joel Radio. Another year. How many is this? I lost count. But we'll catch you next time. See ya.